kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What were you typing?
SML Naked Cast.
SML Naked Cast. No one wants to see that ever.
SML Naked Cast.
See? Now it has to be done.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm not naked. Now somehow that feels like a travesty.
Oh, boy.
And only the people that were watching live get to know why.
We will never know. Perhaps no one will ever know.
Unless they go watch the VOD. And in that case, that's cheating, you fuckers.
Oh, my Lord. We are not alone, though. We have a guest joining us today. Patrick Hickey Jr., how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, Joe. Nice to be on the show.
The Padre, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I just have multiple personalities, so I'm just going to jump in and out throughout the entire show. I'll do some Jigglypuff later, some Kermit the Frog, but yeah, so...
So you are an author and a voice actor. You're kind of giving away that you're a voice actor with the voices. What other voices do you do that we would know?
When your world looks kind of weird and you wish that you were there.
I'm easily amused.
In a world, one man named Joe who had a cat in his profile picture, rated PG-13 for bare butt cheeks.
Yeah. Oh man, we got to give a quick shout out. Carnage just subbed to us.
Nice.
On Twitch. So nice. Thank you, Carnage, dropping subs.
Take your money.
Pretty much. Gotta love it.
That's our new sub alert. We're not paying you for that either.
Take your money.
You done said it. We stole it. That's all there is to it.
That's fine.
I'm going to write that down. Take your money. 2 minutes in.
We've been looking for a good sub alert sound.
Yeah, we have my buddy George, who does the intro to the show. He does some alerts for us when people drop bits. Mm-hmm. We'll just pause the stream for a second, and I'll play one on Winamp, because that's how high-tech we are.
Oh, my God, Winamp.
By we, he means him.
Yes.
I actually know how to use the computer.
Oh, my God.
But I'll play the alerts, and we have them for biddies. We just don't have anything for a sub yet, so.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do. We're stealing you.
We're sorry, you're now a part of the shit show forever.
Forever. Oh my God.
Oh, so again, you're an author. Tell us, what are some of the books that you have written that we would know about?
Well, I've only written one published book. The rest of all appeared in Penthouse Forum. my first
what book- issue I might have it.
Oh my God. My first book came out in spring of 2018. It's called The Minds Behind the Games, Interviews with Cult and Classic Video Game Developers. I'm also featured in two volumes of Brett Weiss's Super Nintendo Encyclopedia. And I have three more books in the Minds Behind the Game series forthcoming. One is The Minds Behind Adventure Games, which is coming out this fall. Then The Minds Behind the Sports Games, which is coming out in the spring. And then Minds Behind the Shooter Games, which is coming out fall 2020. So
I'm sensing a theme.
Lots of video game history. I mean, I just think it sucks that you could be in Starbucks and sitting next to a person that you've spent like hundred hours of your life getting to know, and you have no idea who they are, you know. But if it was like a filmmaker or an actor or a singer, you know every move that they make. So I've kind of dedicated a big portion of my journalistic career to finding out the stories that fueled some of like the greatest video games of all time.
Who are some of the more interesting people that you've talked to?
Mark Turmel, who did NBA Jam. David Crane, who did Pitfall. Tony Barnes, who's done like a ton of games that like people have played, but like they never ask who created it. Like, you know, Jungle Strike and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Strider. That's the thing. Most of these guys are super cool, and no one ever really asks them to tell their story. So when I approach them, they're kind of like, "Are you sure you want to talk to me?" I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." So it's been a lot of fun getting to hear like the things that were going on in these guys' heads and in their lives while they were making these games.
That is really cool.
Who would be your dream interview?
You.
Oh, well, here we go. You're also full of shit, but let's continue.
Okay.
Actually, Root Beer is my jam, not only just sub, but No Time for Games drop biddies. So
drop it, bitch!
Drop it, biddies, baby.
Oh, yeah, that was good, too.
That was good. He hasn't even heard the sound. He did, because he watched the... He actually is, like, the one person that listened.
Yeah, you actually listened to an episode. So you probably heard the sound effects that George did for dropping bits.
Well, that was one of my ulterior motives, to, like, just replace George in every single way. Sorry, George. Not Rip sorry. George.
We're going to have to get some professional recordings off of you.
Sure, no, that's fine. To answer Cole's question, dream interviews, it's hard because like I've interviewed hundreds of video game developers because I've been a journalist, you know, for close to 15 years. But like I would say Michael Brook was one of them, and he did NHL PA 93 and NHL 94. So those were like my jams growing up. Those were like the two hockey games that I played the living crap out of. And he's actually writing the foreword for the sports edition.
Oh, that's cool.
So just to be able to connect with him the way that I have, he's an amazing guy too. And he was also the producer on the original Madden. So for Sega Genesis. So, just really cool to talk to him. I'm trying to think, a dream interview.
Can be living or dead.
Could be living or dead. A video game developer or just period.
Whoever you want.
So I have to say, I have interviewed people that have gone on to die shortly thereafter. I'm kind of like a black widow of, I'm telling you, no, it's the truth. Like I interviewed, I interviewed Ultimate Warrior a couple of months before he passed away. I interviewed Paul Walker 2 weeks before he passed away.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I interviewed Philip Seymour Hoffman. I would probably say my dream interview would probably be like Todd McFarlane or Stan Lee. Cause those two guys, like, their minds are just amazing. Like the creator of Spawn and Venom, like, oh my God, like, Spider-Man, I would totally love to like just get inside their heads for a little while.
So. I'm sure Todd McFarlane seems somewhat approachable given the people that you've talked to. I would imagine just reaching out to his people would be able to get you an interview with him.
Eventually one day, you know, we'll get there.
That's cool that you interviewed Ultimate Warrior though.
Oh my God, I could tell you a story. Oh my God.
Well, that's what this show is all about, stories. Let's hear it.
So, this is crazy. I'm working at NBC at the time. It's like 2013, and I interviewed him. And after the interview was over, I was like, do you mind if I get a picture for the article? And this guy's used to being interviewed by so many fanboys that he was like, oh yeah, only if you're in the picture. And I'm like, no, I have no interest in being in the picture with you. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, my boss would have my ass. Like, I can't take a picture with you. It's totally unprofessional. I can't do it. So, and he's like, well, I don't get it. And I'm looking at the PR person, like, please save me. You know, because, like, I'm 6'4". At that time, I was, like, 350 pounds. I was a big guy, but, like, Ultimate Warrior is Ultimate Warrior, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, what I want you to do is just stand next to the poster, because it was, like, a poster of him, like, back in the 80s. I'm like, just stand next to the poster and smile. I'll take a picture. It'll be great for the article. And he was just like, but you don't want to take a picture with me? I'm like, the 10-year-old boy in me would love to take a picture with you, but I can't because it's not professional. I can't do it. So he was, like, really pissed off and, like, insulted by it. But I was like, listen, I can't help you. So then, like, 3 months later, I'm in L.A. covering SummerSlam. And he gave this amazing talk about, like, you know, you guys just remember me, you know, wrestling at WrestleMania and stuff. There was a time when I had to, like, live in my car and da-da-da-da-da. And, like, it was an amazing speech. Like, no one even clapped at the end. Everyone was just like, can we clap? Like, it was just so real and gritty. And after it was over, I walked over to him and I just shook his hand. And I was like, listen, like, everybody else that gave talks here was all like, rah-rah, sis, boom, ba. And, like, you really, like, hit home with a lot of people. And he was like, are we going to take the picture? Yes. So So, like, he totally remembered me, which was really cool because, I mean, he's probably been interviewed by thousands of people. And then, you know, I would say not too much longer, he passed on, you know. So that's one of my favorite interviews. And the thing is, though, too, after the first interview, he gave, like, all the people that interviewed him, like, this, like, picture of him, like, this painted little 8x10 with, like, a saying on it. And I didn't want to take it either, but after I pissed him off for not taking the picture, I kind of was forced to take it. But, like, I still have it, and I'm happy that I actually did take it, because when he passed on, I just, like, I told my wife, I'm like, I gotta put this up, like, in the man cave, because it was just, like, in a box and I was holding on to it, but now it's, like, in the man cave and I see it all the time.
Yeah. But did you get a picture with him?
No.
Oh.
No. Well, see, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I've interviewed so many people. Like, I've interviewed tons of professional wrestlers, like Rey Mysterio, Paul Heyman, Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, Diamond Dallas Page, Harley Race, all these people. Like, I could have, like,
damn,
a room full of, like, and then, like, actors, actresses, musicians. Like, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I never take pictures with them because I don't want to be looked at as, like, a fanboy. Like, I want them to look at me like a professional and somebody that wants to tell their stories. So it's hard. It's hard not to cross that line. But I tell, like, you know, I'm a journalism professor too, so I tell my students all the time, like, you get to be either a fan or you get to be looked at as somebody that is not equal to them, but is in close proximity to, like, you know, where they're at. And they'll treat you with more respect, and they'll tell you cooler things than they ever will if they think that you're just, like, in love with them. So yeah, you have to kind of straddle that line, you know? It's hard, especially, like, writing this book with a lot of these video game developers. Like, talking to some of these guys, I'm like, oh, my God, like, I love you. Like, you're amazing, but you can't you can't tell them that, you know?
It would be so hard for me to not tell them, like, I love your games. I love this. I'm so happy that you're on the show. I've had a couple of moments on the show where I fanboyed out a little bit.
I've done it. I've fangirled.
Chris Charla being on the show, I thought was a nice fanboy moment for me.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's super hard. You know, it's like, I remember when I was interviewing Michael Brook for the sports book, we were sitting in, like, his hotel room in the city, and we talked for, like, 3 hours. And there was a couple of times when I just want to be like, Mike, I just want to let you know, man, I used to play Madden 93 on a black and white TV. Like, I was a poor kid in Brooklyn, you know, eating, like, you know, Kraft single sandwiches for, like, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And, like, Madden 93 got me through some fucking dark ass times. But, like, you know, they don't care. Like, of course they care, but they probably hear stuff like that all the time. So you just stay on topic. You know, you keep them going, you keep them telling the story, and then, like, I mean, I don't mean to be, like, narcissistic or anything like that, but the Madden chapter in my upcoming sports book is gangster. Like, I totally, like, I'm in love with it. Like, the stuff that I got him to tell me, I don't think I would have gotten if I would have came across that way and just been like, oh, I love spending time with you, you're amazing, which is the truth. I do love spending time with him. He's incredibly intelligent, super smart guy, you know, and he's a straight shooter. But it's like, you get so much farther with people if you treat them the way that they want to be treated and not the way you want to treat them, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It's hard, but that's the thing too. Journalism is selfless. Like, if you want to be a blogger, you could gush, like, all you want. But if you want to be a journalist, like, it's completely different. And that's the problem too. A lot of journalists now, they think that they're journalists, but they act like bloggers. And, like, it's like, perfect example. One of the things I said in the first book is, I will never say if a game is good or bad in this book, because no one cares about my opinion. There's tons of video game books out there that are written by tons of people that are just like, oh, 101 games to play before you die, or da 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 da, and all this stuff. But it's like, it's just opinion. It doesn't mean anything. I want to hear stories. I want to hear stories that aren't on Wikipedia, or I want to hear stories that say that whatever is on Wikipedia is wrong. You know, I want to find out, like, what was going on in somebody's head, stuff that, like, they may not tell anybody else. Like, that's to me, that's what journalism is. It's magic. It's me not paying you, me not knowing anything about you personally, and then sitting down with you and getting you to tell me everything. Like, it's magic.
Yeah. What are some of the favorite stories that people have told you?
You mean for the book or just, like, in general?
In general.
Okay, so, like, I remember Paul Walker, we were talking about this movie that he was in called The Hours, and it's basically about, like, his wife in the movie passes away, and then this is, like, right before Katrina. So his wife passes away during childbirth, and then the baby is on a respirator, but then there's no power, So the baby.
I've seen this movie.
It's a crazy movie.
Yeah.
And he's just talking about how, like, he is almost like that baby on the respirator. Like, there were so many times in his life where he's just cranking away, trying to stay alive. And, like, he's like, I didn't ask to be, you know, a Hollywood superstar. I didn't even ask to be a father and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And he got, like, mega serious. And I just shut my mouth and just let him go and let him vent. And he ended up telling, like, this amazing story. And it would have been so easy to, like, pigeonhole him as this good-looking actor with, like, you know, no depth, but completely the opposite. And I have to say, too, like, another person, like Channing Tatum. I've interviewed Channing Tatum before. He's, like, one of the smartest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. I remember my wife was like, what was he like? And I was like, he looks exactly the way he looks on TV, which is just bullshit because, like, every man cannot, like, even, like, stack up to that. Like, I'm a 100% heterosexual male, and I look at Channing Tatum, and I'm like, oh, fuck, this is not
hell
right.
Hell yeah.
You know, like, this is not right. He looks like this, and I look like this. It's not right, you know? But he was talking about this documentary that he co-produced, and he's talking, and I'm just like, this guy's smart, man. He gets it, you know? And just to hear him talk about, like, issues in, like, South Africa and child poverty and all that, I'm just like, okay. Wow, this guy's got layers. He's like an ogre, you know? So it's good stuff. Like, those are probably two that, like, really stick out to me. I interviewed Don Felder before. He was the guitarist from the Eagles. And he told me how he wrote the guitar lines for Hotel California. That was a great story. You guys know who Gary Wright is?
I'm not familiar, no.
He sang that infamous song, Ooh, Dreamweaver. Dreamweaver. That stupid-ass song. It's a great song. But he told me the story of how that was written. Like, he's like, oh, you know, it was always in India with the Beatles. It's just like the stars are out, and I'm just all right. Oh, Dreamweaver, I believe. I'm like, oh, my God.
Wow.
Like, this is great. This is great. Because, like, if you've watched, like, any 80s, 90s movie where a hot chick walks into the room, you've heard that song before.
Hell yeah.
You know? So for him to tell me that story was pretty cool. So, but again, that's the cool thing. It's like, the longer you're a journalist, I tell my students all the time, you're not going to make millions of dollars, but you're going to get stories. So it's like, whenever I go to a barbecue and they have the radio on, I'm like, yeah, I've interviewed that guy. I've interviewed that guy. You know, like when John Waite comes on the radio and it's like Missing You, I love that song, you know? Like, holy crap, man, I interviewed him on my birthday, like,
damn,
when I was like 31 or whatever. Like, that's crazy, you know? Or like, you know, Who Let the Dogs Out? Like, I interviewed that freaking band, you know? So, like,
even sang the that song? Man. I don't remember
the Baha Men. Yeah, and like, they were promoting Who Let the Dogs Out Again, you know?
Wow.
Are they known for any other song?
No, and they're definitely not known for Who Let the Dogs Out Again, but that was a fun interview.
The Baha Men, oh my God.
Yes, so, but all of that, I feel like all of that has kind of, like, led to where I am now, because the way the book started was, I was 32, I'm a full-time college professor, and my wife was 5 months pregnant, and I just felt like I was at a point in my life where I had to do something really cool, so this way I could justify myself to my eventual child, meaning, like, I didn't want to be one of those fathers that was like, I could have did this, but then, you know, your mom got pregnant and all my dreams went out the window and blah, 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 blah. So I was like, you know what, I need to write a book before my kid is born, so this way, like, if shit happens, I could at least say, you know what, I wrote, like, the great American, like, novel. And yeah, so I went in my man cave, and I'm like, what do I write about? And I was just surrounded by all these games. So I started reaching out to these developers, and I got like 5 or 6 to confirm. And then I started sending out pitches to publishers, and like within a couple of days, it was crazy that I got like a call back from one of them, and McFarlane and Company, and they were exactly the type of publisher that I was looking for. And 3 days later, I had a book deal, and then I just got to work, and then they loved the first book, so I wanted to do a sequel. And they were like, no. And I went, what? And they said, no. Like, because I told them, the first book had 36 games in it. I'm like, this book will have 43. And they're like, no, stupid. I'm like, what? And they're like, no. Like, you could do a sports book. You could do an adventure book. You could do a shooter book. Like you need to, like, think about this as, like, a brand, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Okay, all right, let's do that. So The Minds Behind the Adventure Games is the second book, and then The Minds Behind the Sports Games is the third, and The Minds Behind the Shooter Games is the fourth. And then after that, we'll see what happens. Like, I would love to do, like, Minds Behind the 80s Games. That would be cool. Or Minds Behind the 90s Games. So it's like, this is something...
Platformers.
Can I throw out a request? Rhythm games.
Well, I have... See, this is the thing. I'm sneaky. So, like, The Minds Behind the Adventure Games, I included Parappa the Rappa. And the reason why I included Parappa the Rappa is because it's a rhythm game, but it's driven by the story. The story is, like, super important, and there's a sense of adventure in the game because Parappa's trying to get to, like, Sunny Funny. So I figured I'd include it in Parappa the Rappa. And so far, no one on my Facebook page has complained because I got Masaya Matsuura, the guy that wrote all the music. I got Rodney Greenblatt, the guy that designed the characters. And I got Perry Rogers, the North American producer. So it's, like, excellently sourced, and they talk about, like, the entire series and, you know, the pros and cons of it all. So it worked out good in that sense.
That is awesome.
Carnage said The Minds Behind Walking Sim Games, and I feel attacked.
The Walking Sim Games?
I love Walking Sims.
Oh my god.
Here we call them Walksploration. Thank you very fucking much.
Walksplorations from Carnage. What a wonderful recommendation. Thank you very much.
Oh, don't give Carnage any more of a reason to have an ego.
Oh, God. He's already pinpointed that you're from New York. He's having a party over that.
Oh, because of my accent over here. Oh, you're talking to me? Oh.
It's funny because, like, whenever I go somewhere else, they're like, you're from Brooklyn, aren't you? I'm like, yes, I am. Yes.
You got a fucking problem with it?
I got a fucking problem with that over here. Oh.
It's funny, though, too, because, like, I grew up where all of those mafia movies take place.
So are you in any of them?
No, I'm not. Because I'm 36. I'm not that old. So it's like all those movies were shot, like, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. I was like 5 or 6. And all those mafia guys were all like, they used to call all the Irish kids in Brooklyn red. Because most Irish kids, you know, are all like freckled and ginger and stuff like that. And he's like, Red. Hey, Red, come over here. Do me a favor. Oh, bro, come over here. And you'd walk over and be like, see this box? Take it over to 65th Street and ask for Vito. Don't fucking open the box. Just give it to Vito and then come back here. I'll give you $20. All right, Red? All right, go get him. You know? That's what they would do. So it's like you'd hang out the whole summer on your block and you'd make like, you know, $100 a day and you'd be running shit for the mob and not even know it. You'd be so stupid.
Oh, my God.
But that was old school Brooklyn for you. That would never happen now. The kids are way too smart. They'd be like, what about $25? Like, you know, you'd offer the kid $20. Well, what about 25? It's 25 blocks. How about $1 a block? Back then, little Irish kid would just be like, holy shit, $20. You know how many fucking bazookas I could buy for $20? You know how many brownies, how many little Debbies I could buy?
How many packs of Garbage Pail Kids cards?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was after as a kid.
Garbage Pail Kids were amazing.
Oh yeah.
Love those things.
One of the artists, she works on the Garbage Pail Kids cards now. She bought a copy of my book. So that was like, damn, like I feel like I made it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was cool. She's like one of my celebrity buyers. I'm like, yeah, she's cool. She matters. And she bought my book. That's awesome.
There, you could get an interview with the Minds Behind Garbage Pail Kids.
That would be awesome.
There you go.
Well, that is a can of worms, too.
That's true.
There has to be some shit going on in the background to have created Garbage Pail Kids.
Absolutely. It's like John Wayne Gacy created all the kids he fucking hid in his basement. That's what they look like after 3 weeks in my basement.
Oh, my Lord. Jumping back a little bit, who are some of the first video game developers that got back to you and were on board with your book?
Okay, so...
Day one.
I'm sitting in my... sitting in my man cave and I'm pondering my attempt at a great American novel, and I just start pulling out games, and the games that I pulled out were Toe Jam and Earl, King's Bounty, Mutant League Football, Yar's Revenge, Super Battle Tank, and Boy and His Blob. So that's like Gary Kitchen, David Crane, let's see, Michael Menheim, John Van Keegenem, maybe like two or three more. So I pulled those out, and I'm like, if I could get half of these guys to get back in contact with me, I would have enough to pitch a publisher. So ironically, all those games that I mentioned to you, all of those guys got back to me like within a week.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, I mean, I'm a good pitch man. I come across authentic. I don't come across slimy or anything. So they, you know, they were down, and I worked super hard on banging out those chapters as quickly as possible. So it's like that night in the man cave was like Halloween 2016. So then by like Thanksgiving, I had those chapters written and I started pitching. So like the day after Thanksgiving, I started sending out pitches, and then maybe like 2 days after that, I had a book deal. So super lucky, you know, or maybe I was just onto something. I don't know. But those guys, they got back to me. And then the thing that helped was whenever I pitched another developer, I would tell them who I have already. So these guys all know each other, you know. So I would say, oh, well, you know, I'm interviewing Gary Kitchen and David Crane for Boy and His Blob. And they would go, oh, well, I worked for Gary and Dave at Activision in 1987, blah, 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 blah. And I would go, oh, okay. So, and now, I mean, the minds behind the shooter games, I just confirmed Gears of War. Ooh. And yeah, and I ended up getting the lead level designer, Lee Perry. And the way that I got him was one of the guys that I interviewed for the first book, Eric Holmes, who did one of the Batman Arkham games, but he did Hulk Ultimate Destruction for PS2, which is a freaking awesome game.
Oh, I love that Hulk game.
It's great, you know, and there's a great story behind it too. So if you read the book, like you'll love the game like even more. He reached out to me because he follows me on Facebook and he's on the Minds Behind the Games Facebook page and stuff like that. And he was like, how's the shooter book coming along? And I'm like, it's coming along good. I'm like, but I need a golden goose. I'm like, I need something sexy, you know? And he was like, oh, well, do you know Lee Perry from, you know, Epic? And I'm like, no, but I'd like to. And he's like, I got you. Like, Eric Holmes has helped me so much with the shooter book, the same way Michael Brooke has helped me with the sports book. Like, all of these guys are super giving and super caring. I would say there's probably only like four people that have flat out told me no. There's probably about 200 that haven't answered me. But
we know that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would say there's only like four people that flat out said no, or said, listen, I don't know if like anybody would want to hear about the game, like da 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 da. And then I would have to like kind of try and prod them and be like, no, like, you know, talk to me, da da da. And then they said no. A couple of people were writing their own books, so they didn't want to spill the beans to me. So, but for the most part, like, if they answer me and they say that they're interested, like, I'm very comfortable that I can persuade them, because it's the thing. It's like, what I'm doing is completely selfless. I'm not out to say whether their game is good or bad. I just want to hear the story. So like, I'll give you an example. E.T. is considered by many to be like one of the worst games of all time. I personally do not feel that it is. I feel like for 5 weeks, what was done in 5 weeks, there's not a lot of people at that point in gaming history that could have pulled that off in 5 weeks. And the game ended up selling 1.6 million copies for a 5 week development cycle. I mean, that's insane. So, but like Howard Scott Warshaw was under a lot of pressure. So everyone that reads that chapter, they say, you know, you looked at that from like a different point of view. And I was like, yeah, I didn't look at it from the point of view of the angry video game, you know, nerd or whatever. Like, I didn't want to trash it because everybody trashes everything now. I wanted to get to like the bottom of like what this experience was like for him. It wasn't my place to say whether the game was good or bad. So it's like I try and tackle each chapter from that kind of point of view. Like, what makes the game unique? And I try and find out the stories like behind the game, instead of just, oh, this game sucks, or oh, this game is great, this game is a tour de force, this is the game that the country needs right now, you know, like all these stupid fucking things that critics say now, you know. It's like it doesn't like further the zeitgeist. It doesn't like add lore to the story. It doesn't make the story sexy, you know. It just makes it so absolute and black and white, when the gray is so much cooler, you know.
Yeah. And I appreciate the fact that you don't shit on games. Like, there's too many people nowadays that if a game has any faults to it, it's the worst thing ever, it's the worst game ever made, it's a travesty of justice that it was allowed to exist. And I don't like that. I like to think that we're a more positive show when we do give a negative review, because, you know, you have to admit not every game is perfect.
Absolutely.
We always follow it up with, well, what would you do to improve it?
Absolutely.
So even the negative reviews, we're trying to be constructive with our criticism instead of, oh, this game just sucks ass. Don't fucking spend your money on this piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. See, like, I've had developers tell me flat out, like, yeah, that game sucked. Like, I'm ashamed of that. Da, 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 da. I would rather have them say it, you know, because me saying it doesn't do anything, you know? So that's a big thing for me. It's like, I run my own entertainment site. I've been running my own entertainment website for over 10 years, called ReviewFix.com. And I've written hundreds of video game reviews, but I have to say, since I started writing this book, I've probably only written about, and this is like, since I wrote the first book and now I'm on book four, I've probably only written like 3 or 4 reviews since I started doing this, because I just realized, you know what, like, what I'm doing now is so much more important than just saying if a game is good or not.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if the game, what I think of the game doesn't mean anything. If the game influenced other games, or if there's a great story behind it, that's what matters more. So now it's like, I'll go to like a video game store and I'll buy a game, and someone will go, why are you buying that game? That game sucks. And I'm like, yeah, but do you know the producer on this game is actually the designer on this game? And they'll go, no. And I'm like, well, that's the difference between me and you. And they'll go, oh, okay, well, what do you mean he did that? And then all of a sudden we'll start a conversation, and then I'll give them a business card, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, they'll buy my book. And that's like kind of what I want to do. I have 2 nephews that are just like, I remember this was months ago, like maybe even a year ago, my 10-year-old nephew was like, oh, Call of Duty sucks. And I was like, listen, you can't say that. You can't say that a game sucks. You can't do it. And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, you play Fortnite. Okay, Fortnite is a lot of fun, and it's a lot of fun because of where you're at in your life right now. I'm like, I'm telling you, though, that there will be a time and place when you decide to play Call of Duty that you'll be like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. And he's like, no. So then I had Modern Warfare 4 on, like, right in front of me, so I put it on, and I'm just like, try it. And, like, 2 hours, he's just going to town. And I'm like, what do you think? And he goes, it's really good. And I'm like, all right, I'm like, Kevin, you got to admit something to me now. And he's like, what? I'm like, you never played Call of Duty before today, right? And he goes, no. And I'm like, see, that's a huge problem. And that's what I think. That's a microcosm of the video game industry today. There's tons of people that will say a game sucks and they've never played it before just because they've read somebody's review somewhere or they watched somebody's video. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
And that's something that I want people to read my books, read the chapters in my book, and then rediscover a game that they either didn't like or appreciated and look at it in a completely different light. Because to me, video games are art. And again, no one looks at, like, the Mona Lisa and says, that's fucking ugly. Or, oh, that's fucking beautiful. Like, they go, I don't know how I feel about this. I may never know how I feel about this. That's the way I want people to think about video games.
It's a good way to think. There's just too much negativity in the world today. And I don't know. Too much bitching, too much complaining, too much this thing sucks.
Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy. It's so easy to say something sucks. Or it's so easy to say, you know, somebody is this. It's like I tell people all the time, I feel like anyone is capable of falling in love with, like, anybody at any given time. The thing is, you've just got to be open-minded. You know, you've got to look at somebody and try and, like, say, what is special about this person? It's the same thing, like, how many times have you listened to a song and you're like, this song sucks. And then you're, like, maybe, like, stuck in traffic or whatever, and then you hear a part of the song that you never heard before, and you're like, oh, okay, this song is actually better than I thought. Or with a movie, you've seen a movie 5 or 6 times, and it takes you, like, the 7th or 8th time to finally go, oh, you know what? All right, this is actually pretty good. Or sometimes it's so bad it's good. You know, it's like this.
DOA, dead or alive.
Yes. Yes.
I'm the queen of so bad it's good.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie. Like, I've seen that movie, like, 50 times, and it's terrible, but I love it, and I'll watch the shit out of it, you know? So, Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze, not a very good movie, but I freaking love it. I'll watch it over and over again. So,
I can watch
Joe Dirt forever.
Joe Dirt. Anything with Adam Sandler falls into that category, too.
I made my husband watch Two Wong Fu with me yesterday, and I don't think he'll ever forgive me for making him see Wesley Snipes in drag.
It's a great movie.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it so much.
Yep.
And he's just sitting there the whole time, like, side-eyeing me, like, why are we watching this?
What are you
and I'm like, to me? You don't understand. I'm so fucking giddy right now.
Oh, man.
We got Cole involved in the conversation.
You know what the terrible part was? For a little bit of that, I realized I was, like, joining the conversation in my head, but then actually
it all out. Just jump in, Cole. I told you. And listen, I'll blow up some spots, man. I told these guys before the show that the only reason why I decided to come on the show is because of Cole. It's the truth.
Our own Louise.
My accent is lovely, even if the rest of it's...
Although he makes fun of
my accent so bad.
He does, but it's an easy accent to make fun of.
It is. I mean, and you know, the worst part is, like, I curve a lot of it for the show. I think I've talked about it before. When I was in high school, we had, I took drama.
Can you say high school again?
High school.
I love it.
But I took drama. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we had to do was she wanted us to learn to curb our accents.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would take carrots and cut them into little slices. And then we had to put them vertically between our teeth. And we had to say, the big black bug bled blue black blood. And if you broke your carrot chip, you failed.
Oh, wow.
So that's how she cut our accents out of us before we did a play.
That's crazy.
And so whenever, like, we're doing the show, I have that in the back of my head all the time. And it's still really hard for me to, like, cut the long I sound. And that's why high school or pie or anything like that.
Nah, it's great.
Far.
Far is one that, like, you'll hear me bounce back and forth with it. I'll say far or I'll say fire. And you can tell I'm really trying to push it. Oh, man. Another bad one. And my husband, like, my husband's from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
and it does not matter that it's been 18 fucking years. The moment somebody comes through that front door, he will whisper to me, "Whatever you do, please don't offer them ice."
Oh my god!
Every time.
Oh, because my
it sounds
Lord.
Like ass.
That's great. I love it.
And his mother. His mother will only agree to go places with me if I tell her that I need to go at 9 a.m. Because she just wants to get tickled over me. And it's been 18 years. You'd think they'd be over it by now.
Oh, man.
Nope. What time are we leaving? 9 a.m. What time are we going to be home? Before 5, I promise, because the goddamn school bus is going to run.
Oh, my God. Great.
Oh, my God.
Oh my god.
So now next time you need to practice. God. See, I can't, that's not fair. I can't make my voice go that deep.
In a world where Cole couldn't do a deep voice.
Nope. It just sounds like I'm trying to burp or something.
Do it.
My god.
I can't do a deep voice.
It's like in the middle of your
My throat hurts so hard just from doing that.
It's funny because, like, after I got my first voice acting gig with the Padre, I didn't want to be a one-hit wonder, so I started auditioning for other roles, and I ended up getting the role of this T-Rex in this video game that's going to be out probably sometime next year called Relentless Rex, and I play, like, the T-Rex, and he sounds kind of like Shredder from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with, like, kind of like an Austrian accent, and...
Hi, Joe. My name is Relentless Rex. I'm over here.
And I just, you know, I kind of came up with the voice on the fly. He wanted somebody that sounded a little bit like Kevin Michael Richardson, and I didn't want to, like, riff off of him. So I did that with, like, the little Arnold Schwarzenegger in the background. But, like, it sounded great. I was happy with it. But, like, when I was finished, it just felt like my throat was burning. So, you know, I felt like I had something in the back of my throat, so I went and brushed my teeth, and I was just, like, spitting up blood.
Oh.
But it sounded so good. So I recorded the rest of the lines that I needed and then just kept practicing, and now I'm fine. But, like, that first day, man, holy crap. It was bad.
Yeah, you know? You can fry your vocal cords.
Yeah, but it's all right. Whatever. You only live once. So.
There's sign language. So yeah, language. Once you fuck your voice box.
I only know like one thing in sign language, so like I would be in trouble. And being from Brooklyn, you guys can guess the one thing I know. Yeah.
It's the one thing I know, too.
I actually know sign language.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Fuck you is the only thing I know how to do in sign language.
I trained deaf Dalmatians.
Oh, wow.
Really?
So, Holy shit, a new story. One of the first ones that we rescued that was bilaterally deaf, she was 11 years old, and she had been kept in a barn, and she wasn't interacted with. And so an 11-year-old dog didn't know any sign language commands, and she was bilaterally deaf, so she couldn't hear out of either ear. Wow. At the same time, we had a 2-year-old male, and I could not, for the life of me, get the 11-year-old's name was Purdy, and I couldn't get her to respond shit. And I started teaching the 2-year-old, his name was Spencer. I would teach Spencer commands with my voice, and then I would do the sign with it. And it got to the point where Purdy was watching Spencer get treats for following the hand signals. Mm-hmm. And she wanted the treats too.
There you go.
And so we used the hearing dog to teach the deaf one, and now I can teach deaf dogs as well. But
that's cool.
Yeah, I currently have 3 Dalmatians, and only one of them knows sign language because the other two don't give a fuck.
So you're like Cruella de Vil.
No, I don't want to make them into coats. I just let them lay on me and then be coats that way.
That's awesome.
Living coats. But yeah, can't believe I've never talked about that on the show.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before. That's new.
I did it for years. We did all across the country rescue, and we would take dogs all over the country to meet up with other people and to get them adopted. And we took the ones that couldn't get adopted. I always had a fondness for like the old ones with problems. So if it was deaf or if it was just what they would consider unadoptable because it was too old. Bring it home with us.
Hmm. Yeah. The best trick I've ever taught my pets, I only have cats, and they don't learn anything ever, nor do they want to.
Shit. Mm-hmm.
But our one male punk, I taught him that when I have the treat container in my hand, if he stands up and hits it with his paw, I'll tip it over and he'll get treats.
Nice. Gabe,
that's the only thing I've succeeded at.
Gabe actually knows like the bedtime routine and stuff. So as soon as he sees me start getting ready for bed, he knows. Mm-hmm. And he knows where to be to go to bed. And then he hears the alarm in the morning. The terrible part with Gabe is that he also knows how to turn the alarm off.
And oh, no.
So he can, it's on my phone, but he'll just swipe it and it goes. It's off. And awesome. I'm like, son of a bitch. And there are days where that cat does not want to get up at 5 a.m. and he will turn that shit off. So now we have to set 2 phones.
Oh, God.
And hide one.
Oh, man. That's beautiful. Otherwise,
I'm not waking up. The first time he did it, he wasn't careful about it, and he flew and slung it off the desk, too. That's how my phone got cracked. Oh, man. He's much gentler now because he realized he got in trouble for that one. So.
Oh, man. Oh, cats. What are we going to do with them?
Not turn them into dogs or coats.
Oh, so Patrick, how did you get into voice acting?
So that's a story. So what happened was I had just really finished the first book. So I'm kind of a workaholic. So after I finished the first book, I'm kind of like, I need to do something else. So I kind of like dedicated a lot of time to improving my site. I kind of redesigned it, and I was getting back into like doing a lot of indie video game development. Indie video game journalism and stuff like that. And I came across this game on Twitter, and it was just like an animated GIF or GIF or whatever you want to call it, of like a Catholic priest like walking through like this like kind of forest, and all of a sudden like the tree comes alive and hits him. And I'm like, oh, this game looks pretty cool. So I emailed the team, and I said, oh, I'd love to interview you guys for the site. And I did. And it turns out that like I was the first person to ever interview them. So, after I interviewed them, the name of the game is The Padre. So, they asked me if I wanted to play the game in beta. So I was like, yeah, sure, no problem, I'll try it. So as soon as I started playing it, like, it's a point-and-click survival horror game. So, like, the first line in the game is, it's been a week since we've heard from Cardinal Benedictus. And week is spelled W-E-E-K. But in the beta, it was spelled W-E-A-K. So being the college journalism and English professor, I'm like, this is a narrative-based game, and if there's a typo in it that early, it's going to deter a lot of gamers. And,
Yeah.
I love these developers. They're really cool. They're working really hard on this, and this game looks beautiful. So I went to my wife. I'm like, what do you think if I, like, ask them if I could edit all of the dialogue in the game? And she's like, if you want to do it, do it. You know, it's kind of like the same thing that she told me when I asked her, like, what she thought about me writing the book. She was just like, don't talk about it, just do it. She's like, don't be like everybody else and say, I'm going to do this. And well, she's like, just shut up and do it, you know? So, I reached out to Bence Zahali, and I was just like, dude, what do you think about me editing all the dialogue in your game? And we came up with a price, and within, like, minutes, I had all of the dialogue for the entire game. So I spent, like, a good, like, 4 to 6 hours just, like, going through and fine-combing, like, every single line in the entire game. So I sent it back to them, like, the same day, and they were like, holy crap. And, it just so happened that, like, every, like, couple of days, they would be like, oh, well, we added more to the game. So I'm like, oh, okay. So now I'm like, this wasn't, like, a one-time thing. These guys, like, want me around. So it kind of felt really cool. They're, like, in Hungary, and they're super nice. And they're big, like, pop culture geeks, so we got along great. And we're getting ready to go to Kickstarter, and they had me edit, like, the entire Kickstarter page, like the English and stuff, to make sure that it was perfect. They gave me a lot of responsibility. Like, they actually, like, trusted me, you know, and they've never met me. So it was just like, I had a really good relationship with them. And they were like, it was probably like a week or so before we were supposed to go to Kickstarter. And they're like, the voice actor left. And I was like, what happened? And they said, oh, you know, he said he's having personal problems and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, I could do the voice. And they're like, what? I'm like, well, to be fair, I'm like, the guy that was doing the voice kind of sounded like Russell Brand. You know, it's like, it's supposed to be a survival horror game. And he's all like, oh, you know, this little wacky Englishman. Oh, my God, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm like, it doesn't fit.
Yeah, that would have been weird playing the Padre a voice like that.
It just didn't fit at all, you know. And they're like, well, what do you think you could do? I'm like, I could do something. Like, just, I'm like, give me a couple of minutes. And I went back in my man cave, which is where I do a lot of my serious thinking and stuff like that. And I'm just like, oh my God, what did I just say? I just said that I could voice a character in a game. Oh my God. You know, so I've always done voices as a kid, and I've always had fun and made prank phone calls and stuff like that. But I knew that, like, the deeper register was where I was going to find this voice. So I knew I had to maintain the English accent. So that was one thing. And then I knew that I figured he's going to be a Catholic priest. It's supposed to be a scary game, so it's got to be deep. So it's got to be like a deep English voice. So
I just really came up with the Padre. My name is Alexander, and I'm the Padre. And I'm just walking through this dark, mysterious mansion.
So I sent it to them, and Bence is just like, holy crap, this is perfect. You know? So then he's like, can you record, like, all the lines? So then I went in my man cave, and I recorded everything, and I sent it to them. So it was, like, that day, they, like, basically killed off the existing Padre and replaced him with me.
Damn.
You know? And then they had the Discord up, so then it was just, like, every day I'd walk my dog, and I would go on the Discord, and I would just be like,
today I'm walking my dog and picking up dog shit, and oh, it's a little nutty today, and blah, blah, blah. And,
like, and just have, like, getting used to speaking in the voice naturally and stuff, and I had a lot of fun with the character, and that, it really changed the timbre of the game, because it went from being, like, really scary to me sending, like, you know, Bence messages like,
wake up, you stupid bastard, and get to work on the game, you know?
And, like, and he would be like, oh my God, like, we have to add this to the game. So the game ended up becoming a lot more funny than it originally was. But that was my first foray into gaming. It was something that I never expected. At first, it was just I was doing these guys a solid and editing the dialogue in the game, and then I became a voice actor. And then what ended up happening, this is another funny side story, while I was promoting my first book, I got a message on Facebook from this guy named Pete Paquette, and he's like, is this Patrick Hickey, the author of the Minds Behind the Games? And I, like, went into, like, my my filtered folder, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, are you Pete Paquette that worked on Bioshock Infinite? And he's like, yeah, how do you know who I am? And I'm like, how the fuck do you know who I am? You know? And he has a podcast, just a few more minutes. So I ended up going on his podcast, and we had a really good talk. And at the end of the talk, he was like, if you ever want to get more involved in video games, let me know. And I'm like, I'm letting you know. So then, like, 2 weeks later, we started talking, and we came up with some ideas, and I ended up writing the story for the game that we're working on right now, which is called Kroom, K-R-O-O-M. And it's basically like if Link from Legend of Zelda was a cyborg and had a gun. Like,
oh,
that's,
my lord.
So it's awesome. So it's like if Link's sword from Legend of Zelda worked more like Strider's and if he had a gun. So it's just like, it's completely badass. It's got a great score. So we've been working on it for like 4 or 5 months now. So it's like I've gone from video game journalist to video game historian to video game editor and voice actor to video game writer. And like, I do a whole bunch of things. I don't do any design because I don't know how to code, but I do a lot of QA, and like, I play the shit out of the game, and I've written the story. So being able to work with Pete, who's doing all the animation, and his brother, who's a freaking evil genius. He's super talented. He's doing the music, and he's the engineer on the game. To be able to do all of this in like the span of like 3 years, my whole life has come full circle. I'm doing like the things that I dreamed about doing when I was a kid. So it all started from Padre just having the balls to say, yeah, I can do this, because I knew that I could. I just didn't know that if I should, you know. And I think that's like advice for like anybody that wants to do something. Just do it. Like, just put your hand out there, raise your hand and say, I can do it. And if you fuck up, you fuck up. But if you do good, then it's amazing, and your entire life could change.
Yeah, you can't get it if you don't take a shot.
Mm-hmm.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
It's such a corny cliche, but it's so freaking true. You know,
it's the most mom thing I could think of at the moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's totally, totally true.
Hey, it applies to this show as well. Like, how many games have we covered on this show that normally we wouldn't cover, but I say, fuck it, I'll send them an email. The worst they can do is say no.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what I tell my kids all the time. I'm like, did you try? Well, no. What if they say no? What if they say no? Mm-hmm. Then what? You carry on doing what you were doing.
Yep.
But what if they say yes?
It's the truth. I remember it was like Christmas Eve 2016, and I'm like looking at the list of games I have for the first book, and I'm like, again, I needed like a golden goose. I needed something super sexy. And I love Fallout. The Fallout series has had like such a huge impact on my life, particularly like 3 and New Vegas. I just love those games so much. And if you guys know your video game history, you know that the series started out as Wasteland. So I pitched Brian Fargo, one of the founders of Interplay, on Christmas Eve 2016. And then like 2 hours later, he got back to me. He's like, oh, I'm in the mall buying Christmas gifts, but like, I'd love to talk to you. And I was just like, holy crap, we got a book now, ladies and gentlemen, you know? So, and Wasteland is the last chapter in the first book, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got to check your book out. Where could we check out the book? Where is it?
So, the book is, it's all over the place. It's on Amazon, it's on Barnes & Noble, but see, this is the cool thing. If you order the book directly through me at patrickhickeyjr.com, and you pay, obviously, for the book, I'm going to have to ship it to you. So when I ship it to you, I'm going to know where you live, which is a good thing and a bad thing. but the thing is, like, perfect example. Where are you from, Joe?
I'm from Pennsylvania.
Okay, so you're from Pennsylvania. So what I would do is I would email you and be like, Joe, talk to me. 76ers, Phillies, Pirates, like, what's going on? Flyers? What are
Steelers.
You do? Steelers. So you would tell me. And then what I would do is I would sneak in a couple, like, I've been a journalist for 15 years. I've been collecting stuff for, like, you know, my entire life. So, like, I sneak in baseball cards, football cards. Like, if you might even say to me, oh, ECW, man, I used to go to the bingo hole all the time.
Yeah, ECW, man.
You know? Yeah, so then I might throw in something like that in the book, you know? So that's what I've done. Like, I just had somebody tell me that they want to pre-order the second book off of me. And, they're from Colorado. So I've already earmarked like a Todd Helton Colorado Rockies card and a Dante Bichette card and stuff like that. And I'm going to sneak them into their book. So this way I want to have a relationship with all of my readers, whenever I like meet people at conventions and stuff like that, I legit want to have a conversation with them. I'm not a YouTube celebrity. I'm not one of these people that's like unapproachable. Like, I want to talk to you. So if you want like a one-of-a-kind experience, like, I would suggest going to patrickhickeyjr.com, and then you could just click the link. You could buy the book right on the page, and I'll get an email shortly thereafter, and I'll write something really cool and original, like, in your book. I'll sign it, and then I'll sneak in a couple of cool things. I have buttons, like, Minds Behind the Games buttons and stickers, all sorts of cool stuff that I try and make the experience mean something to somebody. Because, I mean, Joel, Cole, let's be honest here. People don't like to read anymore.
That's, you know, true.
Well, see, I'm not going to lie. I was going to ask, how hard would it be to get an Audible copy where you read it in the Padre's voice?
Well, see, that's the thing, though, too. Like, I would freaking love to do an Audible version, but the way, like, my publisher has said it to me, because, like, every chapter has, like, three or four different voices in it, they would be like, it would be super hard to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just like, okay. So I've kind of, and that's the thing too, because like my wife loves to read, but my wife listens to most of the things that she comes across. You know, she has an Audible account. She loves listening to books, and she tells me the same thing. She's like, you're missing out on a whole demographic, but it's hard when you're doing the type of stuff that I'm doing. If I was writing the video game book that, you know, dozens of other people are writing, like, easily could make it an ebook. But like, I'm actually like going out to, I'm going out and interviewing people. It's an interview anthology. It's written completely different from pretty much every video game book that's out now.
Yeah.
So it's hard. So yeah. So you can get it on Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, Books A Million. Like, it's all over the place. But like I said, the best place to get it is on patrickhickeyjr.com. So,
I might have to do that. I just got a Twitch payout, so I think I know where some of that money is going to go.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome, too. I just want to say, too, like, the first book holds a special, special place in my heart, because, I mean, it's got, like, games from all across my childhood and, like, teenage years and adolescence, from, like, Wasteland to, like, NHL PA 93 to Spider-Man 2, Hulk Ultimate Destruction, Deus Ex, Maniac Mansion, like, all these games that I grew up playing, and I'm super proud of it. But I have to say, at the same time, too, the next book that's coming out, The Minds Behind the Adventure Games, oh my god, it's like some of the games that I couldn't get for the first book, like Maximum Carnage and Grand Theft Auto. I spoke to the PS1 lead programmer for Grand Theft Auto, and he gave me amazing stuff. So it's just like X-Men Legends, like, so the first book is like a great entry point to like what I'm trying to do, and then the second book just like turns it up another notch. And it's an adventure game book, but like there's rhythm games in there, there's beat 'em ups, there's platformers, it's like anything that tells a story that has like a sense of adventure is in there. So
nice.
Yeah. So yeah.
Oh man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Let's see. So there's two other things, if you guys don't mind, I would love to discuss.
Yeah.
So one of the things is I also do like some consulting work in indie wrestling. I help young wrestlers like kind of like find their voice, find their characters and things like that. And I try and promote indie wrestling as much as possible. And I write reviews of shows. I go to a lot of indie wrestling shows. And one of my high school buddies, Joe Morales, is having a show in Brooklyn on September 28th, and it's actually really sexy. It's an intergender show. So it's like...
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so the thing is, and I know you know your wrestling, Joe, so Tessa Blanchard is going to be there.
Nice.
And she's wrestling like the Battle Club Pro champion, Anthony Bowens, who's like, they call him the five-tool player. He's like the super talented wrestler, but it's like Tessa Blanchard is an ass-kicking machine. So it's like... I'm going to be there that night, and I can't wait to watch it. So, like, that's, like, one of the things that, like, I wanted to talk to you guys about. Like, that's going to be a really cool event. The other thing is I'm actually writing a comic book series right now, too. And we're in the process. We're going to get ready to start pitching that to comic book companies. My artist, Kieran Quinn, is super talented. To kind of, like, pitch the comic to you guys, it's basically, like, Spawn had a baby with Sin City and a Highlander.
No.
So it's like, imagine if like a homeless man had every power that you could ever think of and just has like this like fucked up life that like gives him every reason to be a piece of garbage, but he's not. you know?
Yeah.
So the name of the comic is Condry, and you guys will be hearing more about that like in the next couple of months. I'm really proud of it, and like I said, my artist, Kyrian Quinn, is super talented. So 2020, I'm hoping, well, I'm not hoping, I'm going to have two more books in the Minds Behind the Game series, this comic, and then hopefully Kroom will be done sometime at the end of the year or like early 2021, because it's just three of us working on it. So like I'm going to be super, super busy. And I mean, the guys from Shotguns with Glitters are actively working. I would love to be a part of another game in that series. I would love for the Padre to continue in one way or another, because it just like lit this creative fire in me. So
yeah, the Padre was great.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what it is? It's like, it's one of these games that like, it's hard to peg. And I think like, read it, because I mean, I've read like all of the reviews. And I've watched all of the videos, and I comment on all of the videos, because I want people, because being a journalist, I know what it's like. You write a review and you're really proud of it, and then nobody comments on it. And you're just like, okay, that just was kind of like a fart in the wind. Like nobody, you know, but it was like so many people were like, oh, it's not that scary. Oh, it's not that funny. Or like, I don't know what it should be. And the thing is, it's supposed to be like, just like this guy, like the Padre, he's just like this miserable son of a bitch that just put in this like really, like really shitty situation, you know? And, it's supposed to be like noir and gritty, you know? And, but you're supposed to laugh too, you know? So I think some people really missed out on that, but like, I had so much fun. Like I got to know people like in another part of the world that I would have never met, you know, like there would be times when like Bence would email me or send me pictures, and like the six other guys on the team are like out drinking at a bar in Hungary, you know? And it's like, I've never drank in my life. I'm completely like straight edge, but I'm like, I would kill to be in that bar chilling with you guys right now. Cause I'm a part of the team, you know? So, with all the stuff that's going on now in our world, and with these mass shootings and people talking about video game violence and stuff, I'm going to tell you guys something that like I hope more people listen to. It's like, video games have been a catalyst to like pretty much every single creative opportunity I've ever had in my entire life. Like when I was at NBC, the first year I was at NBC, I was doing all like general assignment reporting and some sports, which made me happy. But like, I wanted to write about video games. And I like pitched my editor while he was in the bathroom. I was like, bro, I want to quit, but like, there's this game coming out called The Last of Us that's in development, and I would love to interview the developer. I can get an interview. Let me cover it for NBC. And he was like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And then that like just like kind of catapulted, and I started covering all the EA games, and I started covering the Call of Duty games and stuff. So it's like, I owe the video game industry and the people that make these games like so much in terms of like my happiness and quality of life and my sense of creativity and wonder. And it's, video games are so much more than like what any politician can say. Video games don't make anyone kill anybody.
Not at all.
It doesn't happen.
Well, didn't you know I'm a master chef because I played Overcook?
There you go. Nice.
Well, I play Rock Band a lot, so obviously I'm a rock star.
Yeah. I play Leisure Suit Larry, so I'm just a scumbag.
Oh no, not that game.
Oh man.
Oh my lord. Well, on that note, seems like a good place to wrap things up. Patrick, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Tons of laughs. We got to get you back on again sometime. My buddy, sure, Tim and I do wrestle casts every now and then. Might have to get you on one of those so you could chat wrestling with us.
Yeah, man, I would love to. Like I said, I've been covering the wrestling industry for over a decade, and it's just like video games to me. It's art, you know, and it's so easy to dismiss wrestling, but it's so much more than what anybody could ever think it is, like from the outside.
Hey, I'm wearing a wrestling shirt right now, so.
Nice, nice. I had my Wolfpack shirt on yesterday, so.
Nice. Love the Wolfpack.
You notice that? We both said nice at the same time. There you go. It's just a shame what they did with Balor, but that'll be a story for another day.
Yes. But the Fiend was awesome.
Yes, the Fiend was awesome. But it shouldn't be at the expense of Balor. Like, this is the founder of the Bullet Club we're talking about. You know?
Yeah,
like,
but he's taking time off, so you can't get too mad.
It's true. It's true.
This is just going to go on so much longer if we keep this up. Patrick, it's been amazing having you on the show.
Pleasure being on the show. Thank you.
Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show. Patrick, do you have any final words?
No, just that I have a very hungry daughter and a very Italian wife. So if you guys are interested, again, patrickhickeyjr.com. Find out more about the book and like the games that I'm working on, and I would love to start talking to all of you guys.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Patrick for coming on and chatting with us. That was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. Patrick's a lovely fellow.
He is, and he does voices.
Yeah, he's done gave us new sub alerts, and he didn't have any choice. That was the whole reason we brought him here. He doesn't even know it.
Yes. Speaking of sub alerts, we do have to give a shout out to Studa, who dropped a sub in between last recording and this recording.
Mm-hmm.
Take your money.
A very Studa thing to do.
I just played the sound effect too.
Oh, well, don't care.
Take your money. It's a bit quieter, so maybe I'll use it until Norg gives us something official.
Okay.
Take your money.
That's
So how was your week?
My week was... It was a week. I've been all flared up. All of my diseases decided this was a good time to hate me.
Nice.
And so I spent most of the week in bed, literally only awake for 2 to 3 hours at a time.
Oh, man.
I have not done well. Today, but by the grace of prednisone, I have been awake since 5 a.m.
Oh, Jesus. So you were like running on fumes right now.
Yeah. And I only slept 3.5 hours last night.
God damn.
Yeah. Because it gets to a point where, like, even though your body hurts and you're tired, you still can't go to sleep because you slept so fucking much.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, you just lay there and flip-flop and bitch that it's hot. And then... My poor husband. That was my whole night last night. And so it's kind of carried over into day. And I've just sat in this chair with my fan in my face, like, everything sucks. It's been a rough one. Like, you know, it's bad when it's been like 100 degrees and I still broke out the heating pad.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And it was like... Here's some Vicodin, and here's some Tramadol, and here's the lidocaine patch, and here's your heating pad, and good luck.
Are you sure you're good to do this today? Do you want to take a time out, or
I'm dramatically better today.
Mika's busy. See if she wants to jump in here and just pretend she played all your games.
Let Mika do it all. It's fine.
Quality's not as good, but fuck it, let her do the work.
Ouch.
Well, I don't want to make you do this show too much longer than you have to, so we should just dive into the news right now. Sound good?
Let's go.
All right. I think the big story of the past week is that an Apex Legends tournament was pulled from ESPN in wake of the recent mass shootings. Do you think this is a good idea or bad idea?
This is ridiculous. Look, Overcooked has not turned me into a master chef. Apex Legends, with its funky little pew-pew guns. Have you seen some of the guns on there?
Mm-hmm.
They shoot lasers, guys.
Isn't it T-rated?
Yeah. I believe it is.
Fucking T-rated.
It's so overwhelmingly fantastical that nobody is going, oh yeah, I shot up a Walmart because of Apex Legends.
No, everyone's going, I shot up a Walmart because of the president.
I was trying to avoid going political, but you're not wrong. You're not.
And it's in their manifestos. It's not like we're making that shit up.
No.
So.
But it's the same. I don't. That's like speaking of Walmart and guns.
Speaking of dicks.
They sell assault rifles, semi-automatic rifles, in their sporting goods section, but they pulled ads for violent video games.
That's from stupid.
And ads for games are very similar to ads for movies, and they get toned down a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think you ever even see blood splatter in a Call of Duty video game trailer anymore.
Yeah, movie trailers are starting to allow, colorized blood in them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that shit in video game trailers or commercials.
And even
Awesome Prime just rated us with 6 people, so ha-ha. Oh,
you sad bastards.
You will regret the day that you... Oh, God, and Carnage is here.
Fuck. Never mind, I don't feel good. We're done.
But yeah, the advertisements for video games are so much tamer than they are for movies and TV shows anymore.
Yeah. I mean, look at some of the trailers for Saving Private Ryan or Black Hawk Down. Remember those? Red mm-hmm. Dawn? Those are gruesome green band trailers. And far worse than what you see for Call of Duty. But we've never gone, oh, maybe we shouldn't have those trailers playing. I mean, we don't play them in front of, Toy Story, but...
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you are in... I don't know how Walmart's electronics section is laid out everywhere. Obviously, it's different from place to place. But here, ours, it's way in the back of the store.
Mm-hmm.
Between sporting goods where you buy the fucking ARs and shoes.
Yeah, sounds like my Walmart.
So, you know.
They're the same nationwide. They really are, except for the specialty stores in Arkansas. Pretty much every Walmart is the same. You could walk into one and be like, oh, it's this layout.
That's, we have two within 15 miles of us, and they're very drastically different in how they're laid out.
I guarantee if you came up here, one of them would look like one of the ones around here.
Probably.
But down to the exact aisles and everything.
The one closest to us that we go to most often, well, I say closest to us, they're both 15 miles away, but one is uphill and the other one is a straighter shot. So it's technically closer because you're not going, meow, 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 and you can go faster than 25 to get there. So, so it's the one we go to. But it's one of the larger Walmarts in the country for whatever fucked up reason. Why they put that here, I don't know.
All right.
But it's just fucking insanely huge. It's one of the Walmarts where when everybody else is like, we don't have layaway anymore, ours is like, yeah, come on, bring it on, bitch. They send out the things, we have Christmas layaway, and I'm like, how's that any different from yesterday before it was Christmas layaway?
I know a lot of Walmarts don't do layaway anymore, but...
No.
What the fuck were we talking about? How are we getting onto layaway now?
Guns. Guns. Where the placements of the guns are in relation to where the placement of the video games are. So, but, I mean, the whole point that I was trying to get to is, nobody just accidentally stumbles into the video game department and sees a Call of Duty ad. And then if they're not going to show violence... What the fuck else are they going to show? Because there's not a whole lot of AAA games that don't have some kind of combat.
Yeah.
Mario. But even then, I remember back when people thought Mario was violent because you jumped on the Goomba's head.
I mean, that is violent. That is horrific.
You literally splat them. It's terrible.
That's why I grew up so fucked up.
The violence a lot about of both
Super
of
Mario Brothers and all the robots that I murdered in Mega Man.
Poor robots.
Yeah, all the oh god, the murder sprees I went on in Contra.
My sister took me to see The Crow when I was 10, so I clearly don't have solid, stable ground for my mentality. But it's such a shoot yourself in the foot thing to be like, oh, we're taking down the ads for violent games. But have you seen our sales on AR-15s?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's just very hypocritical.
Well, Walmart's stupid. So what
also,
you gonna do?
If you need an AR-15 to take down Bambi's mom, you don't need to be hunting. I'm just saying.
Fair.
Do that shit with a muzzle loader like real men.
Yeah,
or a bow.
What are your thoughts on them pulling the Apex Legends tournament from ESPN?
That's also unnecessary because it's, like I said, nobody shot up. That's how we got here. Nobody shot up a Walmart because of Apex Legends Havoc rifle.
Yeah.
You know, you ain't going to Walmart and buying a Havoc rifle. You're going to buy an AR-15. And guess what Apex Legends doesn't fucking have? Okay? Okay. Okay. Have you played Apex Legends? There are no AR-15s.
I played like once.
Yeah. I'm not into Battle Royale style games,
so.
I played a lot of Apex. I thought I was over Battle Royale, and then I played a lot of Apex. I have like two achievements left to complete it, but Division's a thing. So.
Well, if you're playing, let me know. I'll jump in with you. So.
Nice to have it there rather than me and Stu always having to get a random.
I swear to God, we've talked about this.
Probably.
Our shows are reruns now.
Same shit, different Thursday.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Some other news, Gears 5 has gone gold. I still want to call it Gears of War 5 because Gears 5 sounds dumb. Why not just make it Gears with the 5 as an S?
Because, and then everybody would say Gear 5.
Yeah, true.
Just to be contrary.
Yeah. But the game went gold.
I imagine that they dropped the Gears of War because it would be competing against God of War in search engines.
Yeah. Every time people say G-O-W, you have to wonder what it is.
Which one? Yeah. You have to look for context, and nobody fucking wants to do that.
Yeah. Like TF2, what is that?
Team Fortress 2.
I meant Titanfall 2.
Yeah, or Titanfall 2.
Yeah, see? Shit like that.
Context, though.
FF7 is Final Fantasy 7 Final or Fantasy. Fast and Furious 7.
I forgot all about Fast and Furious 7. I watched it, too. I couldn't tell you shit happened in it, but I'm pretty sure there were probably abs.
I don't remember any of them, but if you sit me down and turn one on, I'll be like, oh, it's this one. I can't wait to watch it.
See, I can't rewatch movies.
No?
Once I've seen it, like, the element of surprise is gone. There's only maybe 3 or 4 movies that I can rewatch for sentimental value.
I love the Fast and Furious movies. They're just stupid and fun popcorn movies.
See, Awesome Prime said D2, Diablo 2. I would have actually thought Destiny 2 or Division 2, which is why when I'm talking about Division, I usually split down and put Div 2 so that people don't confuse it with Destiny.
TCTD2.
That's just too much, Tom.
Tom Clancy's The Division 2.
Nobody remembers that the Tom Clancy part is there. That's the thing, you tell me, this is a Tom Clancy game. What? No, really, it really is. Like, Breadstorm has all kinds of rules and stuff they have to follow before they can put Tom Clancy's name on a game.
Do you know any of them offhand?
No.
Helpful.
No, like, there has to be an element of realism to it. It can't be, like, so hyper-fantastical that it couldn't be plausible.
Yeah, it's got to be rooted in reality.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Some other news. Plants vs. Zombies Battle for Neighborville was recently trademarked in Europe, so I guess we know the name of that unannounced third Garden Warfare game.
Yay! Unannounced.
Battle for Neighborville.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
Then that's you. Go ahead.
That's a long one. But then again, nobody's going to shorten it down to the acronym and not know what it is. So yeah. Good on them.
PVZBFN. Yeah, even Prime in chat. PVZ3. That's what everyone's going to call it.
Basically.
They should throw the 3 in the title at least.
I just want Peggle 3.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I feel like if I say it enough, I can wish it into existence. So every time we talk about a PopCap game, I'm just going to wistfully sigh and say, I want Peggle 3.
Le sigh. Oh, man. Some sad news. The Minecraft Super Duper Graphics Pack is officially canceled.
I'm not overwhelmingly concerned about it. Because despite having Minecraft on every fucking platform in this house, I don't care. But I imagine it probably had something to do with parity.
Yeah, they said they couldn't get an acceptable performance across all devices. So I guess if someone's using it on Xbox One, the person playing it on Android needs to experience it as well.
Yeah. Do they, though? Like, you're playing on an Android. You have to know what you're getting into. But nobody loads up Minecraft on their phone and is like, the ray tracing.
Jesus.
Look at the god rays.
Not but on, they not could on have the with damn, the super damn duper damn graphics song. Back.
No, not with no Nokia phone. Look, my kid, you ever see them little cheap-ass E-matic tablets at Walmart?
Mm-hmm.
That's what my kids play Minecraft on.
Oh, Jesus.
That shit was never going to get no super duper fancy pack. It was never going to happen. Like, the moment they decided that kind of parody needed to exist, they had already shit on their plans.
Yeah.
They gave up. They were like, "This, we're just hoping to not do this."
Yeah, they got to figure out a way to let the higher-end devices do the cool shit without being held back.
But yeah. I'm curious who's responsible for that decision, if that was on Mojang or if that was on Microsoft to hold it back.
I don't know. I'm still wondering whose decision it was to release Minecraft Dungeons on everything.
I don't know.
Like, I thought we would finally get to the point, okay, Minecraft Prime, that's got to be on everything because it's already on everything. I was thinking with this side story, Minecraft Dungeons, that should be an Xbox exclusive, should it not?
Well, but is Microsoft really going to fracture their audience like that?
True.
Like,
I feel like this is a blown opportunity to have an exclusive.
Yeah, but then the Sony fanboys would have just still pissed on it anyway. Oh, you guys finally got an exclusive. Ah, it's Minecraft. Fuck you. That's what they sound like in my head. You can't tell me otherwise. So, I mean, the Twitter echo chamber would have done what it did anyway, exclusive or not.
No.
So fuck it. Let everybody have it. I don't care. It's Minecraft.
Okay. Minecraft anything is anywhere. And it just makes you wonder because, you know, I forget who it was with Xbox did an interview recently and he was asked about the Outer Worlds 2, if that might be like a potential Xbox exclusive. And
it will not.
No, he said that is something that they feel could be a good exclusive franchise.
Oh. Hmm. It's not exclusive right now, though, no?
Because it was third party. It's being released by Private Division, and then they were purchased by Microsoft. Mm. Which, by the way, there's rumors that Microsoft is not done adding to their collection, and there might be one more studio announced as joining Microsoft this year. Do you have any speculation who it might be?
No, I'm just mad it wasn't Psyonix. Carry on. Who is it?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh.
There's just rumors. Wild
stabs in the dark.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Perfect world. Who would you want them to acquire?
Psyonix. That Dream got pissed on, okay?
That's just your one. That most people would go big and they'd be like, oh man, Sega, acquire Sega. Or like, acquire Square Enix. You're like, Psyonix, Rocket Ball.
You know what? Fuck it. Yes. Acquire Square Enix so then make them be your slave bitches because they've shit on Xbox so hard.
Oh, I thought you would at least be like, acquire Epic, and then you have Psyonix.
Yeah, but then all the Epic hate comes along, too. People really fucking hate Epic.
They really do.
Wow. I don't understand. I don't know why. Awesome says they should take Bungie back. I don't think Bungie will ever go into another... I think either they will soar or they will fall flat off into existence and do a Telltale.
And just crash and...
Yeah. Just crash and burn. And burn and sadness and tears and a puddle of what they used to be. Like, it really it can only go one of two ways. But I don't think they'll ever sign another agreement after dealing with Microsoft and then EA.
Nah. Activision.
Activision, sorry.
Yeah.
Same thing.
What does Bungie even do these days? They're working on Destiny 2.
Yeah. Which is going free-to-play next month, the base game.
Yeah, but you still got to get all the expansions for the good shit.
Yeah. Then I think I heard somewhere that the first expansion and maybe the second was included, but it was like this most recent good one was the one that was gonna, they were still gonna make you pay out the ass for that.
Yeah, I think they were saying year one is free, maybe.
Maybe.
Awesome Prime is saying yes.
It's a rabbit.
I kind of figured it was an animal.
Yeah, he's tearing up the box. I gave him a new box to sleep in for a bed, and this is how he thanks me.
That son of a bitch.
Ungrateful little butter butt. I call him Butterbutt because my kids repeat it, and I don't want them calling him a lard ass, is what I was going to call him originally.
That's good.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, I don't need that one being repeated. This is my bunny lard ass.
That's why we have Peaches and not Bitch Face.
I mean, his name is Sage. Oh. But, you know, he's much larger than he was supposed to be. They were like, oh, he's a Holland Lop. He'll only be about 3 to 5 pounds. That motherfucker's 3 months old and he's weighing 7 pounds already. We need to talk.
Oh, my God. He's going to be a monster.
He's a big boy. He's got ears that are like 7 inches long. They're obscene.
Oh, my Lord. Going crazy on that box, too.
I know. He hates boxes. He loves them, but he hates them.
He hates boxes, so I'm going to give him a fresh one right before the show.
I gave it to him earlier today. That's the sad part, is that box is already flat, and he's still just having at it.
I scared Coltrane banging on my desk.
Poor kitty.
Poor baby. Oh, my poor baby.
Rootbeer is my jam says, I read an article that explains that one of the reasons why Epic receives so much vitriol is because people are subconsciously realizing that they really don't own any of their digital purchases and it scares them. I think that could be it. Like, I have an old digital library, save like 5 games that I've won that were physical, which sit on the shelf and I haven't even opened. No. But like going into it, buying them digitally, I was like, you know, Microsoft could one day just say, hey, I don't want to support this platform anymore. And that's that. And they're toast.
Yeah. And like, look at the original Xbox Live for the original Xbox. What happened to the games that people bought there?
They're toast. But I also kind of look at it as, I don't typically go back and play games beyond their whatever lifespan I'm enjoying it for. Like, I love Peggle, but I beat Peggle 1, and if it hadn't gone backward compatible, I wouldn't have cared. And even after it went backward compatible, I was like, I still haven't touched it because I'd already beat it. So, I mean, for me personally, I just decided as long as I get my money's worth at the time of purchase, I'm not overwhelmingly conservative about the longevity, but I can understand why other people are.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm of the mindset of, you know, in 5 years, am I really going to care about playing these games? I have an Xbox 360 with like 400 games on a 1 terabyte hard drive.
Yeah.
And I don't touch them because I'm playing my Xbox One, or I'm playing PS4, or I'm playing the Switch, or I'm playing something on my computer, which I never do. But I like never fire up my 360. I don't have a reason to. The few exclusive games that aren't on backward compatibility, I mean, I would love to have them there, and I have them available to play, but I'm not playing them anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really boils down to it not being quite as big an issue for most people. And again, there are people who find that one game and it is their game for life, and they will play it until their fingertips bleed.
Rock Band.
Have at it. I mean, look how much I play Rocket League. But I'm also consciously aware that at some point, either Rocket League 2 will come out, which is just obscene. There doesn't seem to be any reason for that. Or Rocket League will carry on to another system, or I will replace it with something else eventually. Fine. I got my I didn't get my $20. I didn't even buy Rocket League. Studa bought it for me. We got our $40 out of it between the two games.
Yeah, I think you've easily gotten your money's worth out of them.
We're fine. And so, like, if something happened and I couldn't play tomorrow, I'd be like, well, fuck, I miss Rocket League. But I wouldn't be like, oh, I was robbed or anything like that. I got my money's worth, and I'm okay with that. And that's kind of how I feel about the vast majority of my backward, not even just my back compat, but like my entire library, because I do have games still on 360 that aren't backward compatible. And there's a 360 sitting over there that hasn't even been hooked up in seven months.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's just sitting on the shelf.
Exactly.
I don't care. Yeah, it sucks. Whatever. Oh, well, I didn't put as much time into Hardwood Spades as I would like to have. Fine. Got my $5 out of it.
Oh, my God. Anyway, some more news. Believe it or not, we were talking about news. Shantae 5 got an official title of Shantae and the Seven Sirens. Shantae.
Are we really up to 5?
Yeah, still no release date on this one, but it is planned for all platforms, so everyone will get to play Shantae.
I wonder if it'll hit Game Pass, because they've been pretty accepting of Game Pass.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, well, some of the Shantae games were on Game Pass from the start, but none of them have had the opportunity to launch into it yet, so I'm curious to see what happens.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Could be cool.
I feel like Shantae is your secret love game that you just don't know you have yet.
Yeah, she's got to play it.
It would definitely be up her alley. I still haven't ever played it. I've watched people play it, but I've just never had the time to sit down with it.
Shantae.
Terrible.
Oh, what can I do? Splunky 2 has sadly been delayed into 2020. It was scheduled for PS4 and PC only. Hopefully sometime in the future we'll see it on other platforms.
Wait, was it?
Yeah.
How did I not know it wasn't coming to Xbox?
PS4 exclusive.
Fuck.
Yep. Hopefully,
number 3 loves Spelunky.
Hopefully it's not a long exclusive window. There were a bunch of games that came, like the Guacamelee 2 came out as a PS4 exclusive.
Oh, yeah. Balls.
So hopefully it won't be long. Last bit of news I have is a bunch of THQ news. They have acquired Milestone, the makers of like nearly every racing game we cover on the show.
Yeah, I recognize that name.
THQ has acquired Milestone and Gunfire Games, the Darksiders developers.
No, really?
Yep.
THQ needs to calm down.
Calm their tits?
Didn't they already say they had like 500 games in some varying stages of development and ready to be published? And so now they're just like, whatever, give us more.
We need more.
Maybe Microsoft needs to buy THQ.
Maybe.
weed them out a little bit. Shit.
I'm kind of bummed they announced a new Monkey Hero game, which is like a side-scrolling shmup. If it's the same Monkey Hero series that I remember, but it's only coming to PS4, and I'm bummed.
Ugh. But you have one, at least.
Yeah. Sadly.
We all make mistakes, so.
Yeah. THQ confirmed that a new Saints Row game is deep in development, so that is awesome.
Like a full-fledged official Saints Row.
Brand new Saints Row.
Where the fuck did Saints Row actually go at this point?
Who knows, but I can't wait to see.
It's going to be like literal hell. No, they did that already. I don't know. They've gone to space. They've gone to hell. I don't know.
Time travel.
New fourth dimension black hole or some shit.
I don't know. I don't care. I just can't wait to hear more.
Fair enough.
THQ also confirmed that Steve Ellis, one of the creators of Time Splitters, has joined Deep Silver, and a new Time Splitters game is in development.
How long has it been since Time Splitters was a thing?
Long fucking time.
I assume, though, PS2, that there's a
GameCube days.
I assume there's a healthy cult-like following for it, where people are just like, oh my god, Time Splitters! I've never played it. I'm not even familiar with it. I don't know shit about it. I just know that a lot of people are like, oh my god, please let there be a new Time Splitter! Every E3. Everyone. E3, Gamescom, XOXO, it doesn't matter. If there's a game conference, they're hoping for Time Splitters.
Well, it's a shooter series, so you should love it.
Fuck yeah. I like to pew-pew.
Yes, I know you like to pew-pew. last bit of THQ news in more This Exists news. It's been confirmed that another Metro game is in development as well.
Those never end well, do they? No, wait. We're talking Metro. I got mixed up with Metro and Metroid. Because the Metroid game that came out not too long ago did not do well. But Metro did fine.
Trying to think what Metroid game didn't do well. There was but that was a couple of years ago.
Wasn't it Mighty No. 9 or something that was based on Metroid?
No, that's on Mega Man.
Oh, okay. So many M's.
Yeah.
I cannot keep up. Rock Band 4 needs Battle Royale mode. Joe wouldn't play it anyway.
I would try it.
He'd sit in the corner of a shipping container and hope that I would tell him where to go.
It's a rhythm game. I feel more at home on rhythm games. You do your shooters, I'll do my rhythm games.
Pew, 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 pew.
Hey, I went to a Mag Labs last year. It was the first time in probably a decade that I played DDR. And granted, I was only on like the easy setting, but I still 100%ed it. So rhythm games are my shit.
Number one plays a bunch of rhythm games on her phone.
I can't imagine playing them on a phone.
Me neither. I don't know how she plays anything on that phone. I just watch her and I'm just like recoiling in horror.
Poor child, pick up a controller.
Yeah, I bought you a TV and a controller for a reason. Shit, go play Minecraft. At least it's on a screen.
Oh, God. But yeah, that's the news I have. Anything you want to talk about this week?
I saw a blip on Twitter about Dead Island 2 being picked up by a third studio, but I didn't get to see who.
I wouldn't be shocked at this point. And there's a fucking fruit fly flying around my face, and I want to... Ugh.
It's going to go up flies. Your nose.
I'm worried it's going to fly in my drink.
I've had them go up my nose while we were recording.
Really?
Terrible tragedy. Oh.
I had one, like, in plain view land on a Pop-Tart of mine, and I'm like, well, that's garbage.
Sad face.
Farewell, Pop-Tart. You served me well for the 2 bites I had.
Can we ban Xylo? Because he says phone is better than controller-based games. We're going to have to fight it out. This shit goes down here because I don't know how people do it. Like, the most that I play on my phone is, there's a puzzle game called Sarah and Death, and I've played that quite a bit. And then, of course, Artifacts Monday games while I'm waiting for the doctor. Because you said phones are better, Xylo, but we can't. No. Did you play the Dr. Mario phone game?
No, I haven't. Thank you for reminding me. I've wanted to.
I got so stupidly excited for it. And just like overwhelmingly joyous that this game was in existence. And then I downloaded it and I played 15 levels in a row, just hardcore. Me, 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 me. On David's phone, because his is better than mine and the screen isn't busted to fuck. And I was like, meow, 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 I'm a beast. And then I ran out of lives and I never touched it again. I don't know what I was excited for. Are you so over there downloading good? It?
Yes, I am.
Not good. Like, it gives you the possibility of being good, and then, like, when you run out of lives, you realize you're just playing a modified Candy Crush.
Oh, well, I'm going to try it anyway. So, Xylo Freak hates that Dr. Mario game, too. Oh, man.
I was sad about it. I was super sad.
Oh, well. So, any other news, or are you ready to dive into the reviews?
Oh, fuck it. I'm good. Let's go.
We got six games to cover tonight. The first one is called Ancestors Legacy, developed by Destructive Creations, published by 1C Entertainment, released August 13th on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99. Ancestors Legacy is a squad-based real-time strategy with a strong focus on tactics. Inspired by medieval European history, it brings to life four different nations and their conflicts, usually solved by war. Cole, tell us about Ancestors Legacy.
So, let's just get one thing out of the way.
Okay.
There are not enough real-time strategy games on consoles.
I don't not think there enough. Are any other real-time strategy games.
Halo Wars.
Oh, yeah. All right.
And I played the ever-loving shit out of Halo Wars back in the day. Halo Wars used to be my Rocket League, believe it or not. Really? I probably have around 1,500 hours in the original Halo Wars on 360. I was one of the top players.
Wow. I didn't know you were big into the RTS scene.
I'm not, but Halo Wars was my shit. Xylus is Command & Conquer. And I tried to play Command & Conquer, and I don't know, there was something about it I just couldn't get. I mean, it was Halo Wars. Halo. Halo Wars was my shit. So, I think one of the biggest reasons I liked Halo Wars, though, was that it was well suited to a console because it was originally made for consoles. Unlike a lot of real-time strategy games that are made with mouse and keyboard inputs in mind, Halo Wars started out like, hey, we got a controller and this is what we're rolling with.
Yeah.
And so they did a really good job. God damn it, I bumped the mic again. They did a really good job of building it around that concept and making it viable. Ancestors Legacy somehow manages to do the same thing, even though it's not, you know, console based and was on Steam as well. Excuse me. They did an incredible job of mapping the movement system to the controller in such a way that I literally was playing it. I was like, I feel like I know what to do because I played Halo Wars and the controls were very similar and it was very easy to navigate. Like, there were times where I would try to collect my squad and I would have multiple squads kind of scattered around. In a lot of real-time strategy games, you would be stuck going squad to squad to squad and highlighting them individually. Halo Wars would let you hit X and then you would hear all units. And they would just collect everybody and send them wherever the fuck you wanted them to go. And so that's like my standard. How easy is it to move fucking everybody?
Yeah.
And
so how easy is it to move fucking everybody?
You just press X.
Yay!
And I fucking loved it. It took me a while to figure it out because I was expecting it to be that same, go collect the group, send them where you want them, go collect the group, send them where you want them. And I was prolonging it and making myself miserable. And then I did it on accident and I pressed X without clicking a specific group like I would have in Halo Wars. And it highlighted everybody. And in my head, I heard all units. And I went, I like this game so much better now. And it's terrible, but I'm not good at the strategy part of real-time strategy games, and I tend to take on the approach of just send fucking everybody and smash them. And so I needed that ability to just, like, collect everybody and send them off to die. And it let me do that. But it also let me do it in a way that it was functional, because I could still go in and separate out the individual groups, because it takes that rock, paper, scissors type of strategy that was, again, it was the way that Halo Wars played it out. So that you have different group types, and the way that they handle combat is, say, archers are going to rip through the spearmen, you know, where the spearmen are going to rip through the axes, but the axes are going to rip through the shields. So you have to think of the way, like, how you send your units is affected by what kind of unit it is and where it needs to be. So it still has that tactical element where if you don't want to just send everybody in to die and hope for the fucking best, you could still plot for them to be in different positions and then send everybody in from where they are. It worked out incredibly well. However, there were times that when that should have worked out and I had a tactical advantage, there's just a little bit too much RNG on the line. And you could still lose, even though there wasn't any fucking reason for you to. So it could be incredibly frustrating. If you didn't save before you went into that battle, you were starting the whole chapter over. And there were times where I would just be carrying on and expecting it to have auto-saved, and I was going to be fine if I go kick some ass. And then I get to the end of the missions and find that I fuck up. RNG isn't on my side. One or the other can happen easily. And then I have to start all over it again.
No, man.
I'm going to let you play that.
Well, root beer is my jam. Thank you so much for dropping bitties, nor you know what to do.
Dropping bits!
Okay, we are back.
All right, so back to Ancestor's Legacy. All of the gameplay mechanics aside, there is so much in this game. Holy shit. It feels
like a commercial when we do breaks like that.
I know.
And now back to the review.
Your ad could have went here, but instead somebody else gave us $2, so fuck you. Back to the game. So there's so many different ways that you can play Ancestor's Legacy. Not even just the campaign. Like, okay, you have the campaign, it's story-based, there's these really incredibly detailed maps, different ways that you can approach all the different fights, little RNG as to where the enemies might be. Sometimes you're wandering around just hoping you don't bump into somebody, and then you do bump into them, and then they fuck you because, oh, well, that's what you did. That's how strategy games work. But there are 5 missions per campaign chapter, and there are 8 different campaigns. So you will play through Viking campaigns, Germans, even Slavic. There is a lot of incredible lore. Although sometimes it does get a little on the tropey side. The Vikings a lot of times are just kind of cast as like super cringy ass berserkers who are just going to try to murder everybody and everything and plunder and pillage because they can. And there's not a whole lot of other nuance to them besides that. And you're just like, well, could have been a little better. I think sometimes the cringiness of that trope writing for the game is kind of magnified by the fact that the voice acting is a little on the stiff and awkward side. Like, sometimes something that should be a sentence is kind of said, but it almost has a tone as if it's being asked as a question instead of a statement. And it just feels a little weird and chunky and out of place.
Yeah.
That said, it's still a lot of fun. I enjoyed it so much more than I thought I was going to. But again, I didn't have a lot of hopes for, hey, this is going to be well binded to a controller. So I was pleasantly surprised. But there's not enough real-time strategy games like this on Xbox that are both thoughtful and creative and
functional,
but also accessible. Because you can have strategy games. Like, there seems to be either... God damn it, I keep bumping stuff. There seems to be either the super easy ones that have no tactical strategy to them, or they're so insanely complicated that unless you're already a diehard fan of all the strategy games, you're not going to touch it. Ancestor's Legacy finds a middle ground that's very uncommon for games in this genre.
Nice. So the only question left, $40, what do you say?
I do give it a buy it. Support real-time strategy games if those are your things. And even if you're not convinced that you're a fan of it, this would be a good one for anybody to start with.
I wish they had a demo for games like this. Like, I want to try it and see if it's something that I want to drop 40 on.
And it is hard to tell from videos, too. Like, I watched videos of it before I took the review, and I still wasn't sold that Ancestor's Legacy was going to be, you know, that easy enough to play that I wouldn't feel overwhelmed, even as somebody who has experience with strategy games. But it did. It does an incredibly good job of filling that gray area. But again... it's hard to be like, go buy this $40 game even if you don't like strategy games without there being a trial. So it's a fair criticism for there to not, you know, to say it does need a trial.
Yeah.
Or even better, they could put it on Game Pass and then I would be able to find somebody to play the multiplayer with at 5 a.m.
There you go. So 1C, if you're listening, why don't you check out Game Pass?
Yeah. Because I couldn't try this multiplayer.
Did you see the news that Mike Rose, one of the guys who worked on the Descenders, Descenders, mm-hmm. said that Game Pass caused sales of their game to quadruple?
Quadruple. Yeah, because it's constant advertising.
Yeah.
It's on the dashboard, and people are more likely to stream it if they didn't have to shell out for it. So it gets all that extra. Plus, they don't have to cough up review codes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a... I think he said in the end it was something like, you know, 3 times ultimately. But, like, the initial launch was quadruple.
Which still is crazy. That's...
Yeah.
Game Pass is legit, people.
Yeah.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Visara Collection, developed and published by Cubite Interactive, released August 14th on Xbox One for $9.99. For the very first time, the highly acclaimed Japanese arcade shoot-em-ups Visara and Visara 2 are made available to the whole world via this package, Visara Collection. Cole, tell us about it.
So this game wasn't even, like, released in Japan on consoles and we couldn't get it. This was legit. Only in arcades in Japan. Yeah. If that is not niche, nothing is. Carnage said that he loves it, so everybody should buy it. So my review is done here. Bye, guys.
Works for me. I agree. I guess we should say what the game is. So
it's an absolute dyed-in-the-wool bullet hell riddled seizure inducing shmup of epic Japanese proportions. The game follows the storyline about a battle for Japan in 1600 AD after the ruler has died. And then, of course, they're battling over who's going to take over the country. Because that's what you do.
I applaud you for taking note of a plot in a shmup.
I did. Yeah.
That's impressive. Not many people care about the plot in a shmup.
I know, but I did it. I'm so good. I do in all of them that I play because I actually care about narratives, guys. The interesting thing is that knowing that that was the plot because I went and looked it up. Because you're not going to get that from the game itself.
There we go. That's what I was waiting for.
There is, because most of it is still in Japanese.
Yeah.
They did not localize the text or anything like that. Occasionally you will have, like a boss's name will be written in Japanese and English on the sidebar, but any other like explanatory, text or, well, on the menus, like it'll break down characters, speed or power, and that kind of stuff is in English, but actual descriptions of the plot, unless you can read Japanese, you're out of luck. That said, you can play as both Visera 1 and Visera 2. I don't know what I did to it today to make it more bumpable than usual, but I don't know, I gotta do something.
oh, you.
You can play Visera 1 and Visera 2, and there is also a timeless mode. I have one major complaint about the campaigns.
Let's hear it.
First, the plus side is that you can just spam the credit button and keep trying. If Which you is die, good. Just hit LB a whole bunch until you have 9 credits and just keep going. That's great, but you have to do it in one sitting. If there is a save, I could not find it. I would literally just play and play, and I would have like 9 lives, and then I would, or 9 credits, and I would have to stop for something, like to go cook dinner, and I would exit out, and I would come back, and I'd have to start at the beginning all over again. I got so close to the end of both campaigns so many fucking times, and then I just gave up.
Well, there was no making like, dinner when you're playing in an arcade.
No. And at least, at least they were nice enough to let you spam the credits.
Yeah.
But a save system would go a long way. And they added so much other stuff to this game to modernize it. Please.
You know what else goes a long way?
Bitties.
Bitties from BX Latino Heat dropping 200 bitties.
Dropping bits! What? Pancakes!
There we go.
So good.
Delicious. I threw in a wet pancakes. I threw pancakes one in there.
The pancakes are the best. Money. Pancakes never let us down. Pancakes have save buttons.
Pancakes have save buttons.
It's under the whipped cream, trust me. but anyway, that's my only true gripe about the campaign. It is stupid hard. It is a bullet hell. But you can choose from different characters. There's 3 for each of the campaigns, that you can choose between. They have different abilities. Some are fast. Some move a little faster on the screen. Some have more powerful shots. You can get power-ups. You can get bombs. There's a special that you can collect that, you know, lets you clear out any bullets that are in your way, and also does a massive amount of damage to enemies. Fill up those special meters and just go to town. Is there 5 Visera? You have to unlock one of them, though, right? I think you have to unlock.
I would listen to Carnage. He's the pro.
Yeah,
the
game. I think he won. He said a 1K, so I'm assuming he did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you have to unlock some of the other. And Timeless Mode has 6 characters in it, but you have to unlock one of them by completing Visera 2. Which setting, you know, no safe. So I don't want to talk about it. That's a sore spot. But as nice as it is to have the campaigns, like Carnage said in chat, Timeless Mode is where everything goes down. And I had so much more fun with Timeless Mode.
What is Timeless Mode?
It is full screen shmup action. There are just a shit ton of enemies everywhere. You can have up to 4 player local co-op. I didn't play it co-op. And initially I was like, this is problematic. Because the screen is so wide. like, you definitely feel like you need more people with you if you're going to try to clear out all of the enemies.
Yeah.
In each wave. But Timeless Mode just goes wave after wave after wave after wave. And once you get to the point where you're like, I know I cannot in good conscience clear out all the enemies every wave, then you will do far better. And you kind of just pick a path for yourself to work on clearing out. You get through X amount of enemies. It never actually points out how many you have to kill. You just kind of go for a little while, knocking out whatever you can reach, and then you get a boss. Again, save up for your special. I liked to use one of... I cannot pronounce any of those characters' names, but there was one that was relatively slow but had three for their power, and they just fucking annihilated everything. Like, I'd save up, have three of his specials before I get to the boss, and I'm just like, X, X, X. Oh, look, I got more gems. X again. X, 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 X. Never mind, I'm done. Bye!
I like Carnage saying, yes, that dude. I used him to...
Nobody fucking knows how to pronounce those names if they're not Japanese.
It's just that guy.
Yeah, it's that one down in the corner on the bottom left. He's kind of got some blue going on his head. I don't even remember his picture that well. I just know that he killed things.
Oh, man. So to recap, we got two games. We got a Timeless Mode, awesome arcade action, $10. What do you say?
It's only $10?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. $9.99.
This is a buy it. I had a lot of fun with this one. I didn't expect to like it as well as I did. I can be a little hit or miss when it comes to retro games being ported for new generations, but the Timeless Mode definitely seals it, because it doesn't even feel like a retro game with the Timeless Mode. It's just go in, shoot shit, have fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the next game to talk about is called Exception, developed and published by Traxmaster Software, released August 13th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $14.99. When an old woman's computer system is taken over by a virus bent on total annihilation, you assume control of an ordinary software program transformed into an elite combat machine. Retake the system and build your character into a formidable instrument of retribution. Cole, what is Exception?
Well, you pretty much hit the nail on the head.
Well, I would Everybody hope so.
You answered your own damn question. Try that pitch again. No. So, Exception is literally what you just said, in that a granny named Alice has downloaded a virus to her computers. She had a pop-up. It said free software. She didn't even know what software is, but she knew she liked free, so she was hitting all those fucking buttons. It's the most humorous little cutscene ever, because it's comic book style and Granny's just like, hit those buttons! She is totally into it. And I've seen people around me do that shit. It was a little too realistic. I have had to clear out so many computer viruses off of David's parents' computer that it got to the point where I was like, look, I don't know what kind of porn you're looking at, and I'm not trying to kink shame, but you need an ad block. Because they were doing the same shit that the granny does in this game.
Oh, Lord.
Now, after Granny downloads the virus, we get a look inside the computer about what happens. And shit pops off. Absolutely.
In what way?
Like, flames and sparks and monsters, and you're a little computer dude inside the computer, and you're gonna run around with a sword and you're chopping at these little but so they start off so mundane, and I think they're technically supposed to be allies, because the game gives you an achievement for attacking your ally. I don't think you're supposed to chop them, but they take time off of your speed run if you do. So I did it anyway. I did it anyway. Every fucking time. Just to get that extra second knockoff. Actual gameplay wise, this is a platformer, but it does have a few twists. I can't necessarily say it's overwhelmingly unique, because we have seen other platformers that use various physic mechanics to flip and rotate the board. And so that's the same kind of thing that you're going to get here. It's kind of amusing, because each board is laid out almost like it's like a circuit inside of a computer. It's really okay. creative how they've managed to lay these out, but it's also really fucking hard to just describe. And then it gets harder to describe because there are transporters. And so you go across the path, for example, jump up onto a platform, leap into a teleporter, and then the whole area will shift and rotate and look completely different. And then you'll need to go from there to another teleporter and then shift it back another way so that you can bounce off of a couple of different walls and land into the final cube to go on to the next level. Are you confused yet?
Very.
See, and that's the sad thing. As confusing as it is to describe it, it's so intuitive to play it. Like, nothing I can sit here and say about the game is going to do it justice to actually going and playing it.
Well, then, is it fun?
Yes. And here's the most impressive thing about that. I hate speedrunning.
Yeah, we all do.
I don't give a fuck how fast I do the level. I just want to get out of it. Like, I look at levels as puzzles that are just trying to annoy me. The clock does not fucking exist. And yet, for some reason, with exception, I was overwhelmingly drawn to getting a better time. I would have a run, I'd go through all these teleporters, I'd smash all of these enemies and stupid viruses and robots running around, and I'd be so proud of myself when I'd get out of there, and then I'd see that I was somewhere around 29 or 30 on the leaderboard.
No, you gotta do better than that.
No, fuck this. Replay.
How are you gonna feel in a couple of months after, like, hundreds and thousands of people have played the game, and you're no longer, like, anywhere near 20 or 30?
I'm going to cry. I got second place on one level. And I was just like, this is the highlight of my gaming career because I suck at fucking speedrunning. And so to actually be somewhere in that top five, I'm so proud of me.
So the game sounds good. Is there any negatives to it?
Yes, but only one, and it's really stupid and minor.
You don't see
your placement on the leaderboard. If you care about speedrunning, and most people who play this will, you don't see your placement on the leaderboard until after you go back to the level later on. So you do a run, and you see your time, but it will only show you, like, the top, I think it's the top 10. And then you don't see where you place on the leaderboard. If you go back to that level, even if you get a better time, it will show you your last placement on the level instead of where you are at with your new time. So if you want to see where your new time was, you'd have to play it again.
So the leaderboard doesn't update automatically, it seems.
No, it could be a little more instantaneous. I need that gratification, guys. I was so proud of myself when I did well, and then I was so sad when I had to go back and not do as well just to see that I had done well.
Oh, man. Well, overall, $15 on exception. What do you think?
I do give it a buy. This is so well done, and the level design is just incredible.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is Pilot Sports, developed and published by Z Software, released July 31st on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $19.99. Pilot Sports, brilliant gaming fun for the whole family. Split-screen mode for up to 4 players, over 50 different courses, the wildest variety of aircraft, and thrilling challenges provide for all sorts of gaming enjoyment. Cole, tell us about Pilot Sports.
You ever just want to leisurely fly around an island in the middle of the ocean with nothing else around you?
Yeah.
Here's your chance.
Yay.
That's exactly what you're going to do. You're just going to be flying around in a variety of different mechanisms. At times, you'll be in those little puddle jumper planes. Sometimes you'll be flying one of those. Makes sense. you're a pilot. Sometimes you will be in a hang glider. Sometimes you'll be in a parachute because you motherfucking skydived your way out of there. Other times you're going to be in a jetpack. Not all of these things are as good as the other. I certainly found that I had more fun experiencing some of the other flying devices than others. Once you're actually in a level, your goal is basically just fly around. Sometimes there will be different obstacles. You may need to go through rings, Sonic style, you know, collect gems, go through rings, get to the end, do it faster than everybody else. Good job.
Hooray.
Yeah. Yay. Other times you may need to go and collect balloons with your jetpack. And the hitch to the jetpack, I'm going to go ahead and say this now. I fucking hated all the jetpack levels. It's clunky to control, never seems to go where you want it to go. Your damn feet get hung up on everything, and you have to worry about how much fuel you have. I don't care how many times I make the trek from the fueling station to a balloon and back. At least 3 out of 4 of those times, I'm not going to make it, even though it's the exact same fucking trek and I went the exact same fucking path. Somehow I'm always going to run out, and then one time I will do the exact same thing and not run out.
Weird.
It never makes sense. It's like I could not for the life of me figure out the fuel consumption.
Huh.
Maybe I'm just really bad with jetpacks.
Maybe.
But I fucking hated everyone with jetpacks. That said, the planes, the gliders are okay. I didn't care for the parachute either. It's just not like not as bad as the jetpack, but it was just not my favorite. The gliders are a little more okay. You have to find bursts of air to blow you back up, because you will tank and land in the ocean and then be shark food. It would be more amusing if a shark would come up and eat you. You just sit there. It's so mundane and family friendly and wholesome. It's a little disappointing. I need a little more gore in my pilot sports. Thank you.
You need a little more gore in your pilot sports. The brilliant gaming fun for the whole family.
You could have a switch turn on or off sharks. Okay? But you ain't telling me you falling in the ocean like that and that Jaws ain't popping up out of there to get your happy ass.
Oh my god. Okay, what else?
The plane is the best thing to fly. It flies the best. For a game that's all about being a pilot and has sports in the title, it's a surprisingly slow, leisurely game. I was a little put off by, even with the plane, how slow everything goes. Like, you play these kind of games and you think, okay, I'm racing through the rings and I'm going at a reasonable speed and I'm going to be flying around and ding, and you're really kind of not. It's just like putt, 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 putt. And it's a little sad. But at least the plane has a little oomph to it compared to everything else. All that said, even though all of the levels are designed around this one island, each of the events are located on different sides of the island or have different viewpoints of the island. So it keeps looking like it's a different place, and it keeps it fresh rather than being like, yeah, I know, I ran the same course forward and back 7 different times. Yeah. At least it shakes it up to the point that there are 50 different challenges and or levels or whatever you would like to refer to them as.
So there's plenty of content.
There is plenty. And you wouldn't think. I mean, an island can only be so big before it just starts looking like a continent. So they did a really good job, at least as far as like pacing where you're at on the island and how everything fits together. But I was just a little put off by how slow and kind of how clunky the movements were, especially for that fucking jetpack.
Well, but overall, there is, Go ahead.
There is a lot there. And like I said, there's 50 different levels with, you know, the challenges have increasing difficulty. The jetpacks are fucking hard. But I lost my train of thought. Okay.
So jetpacks suck.
There are three medals that you can earn. So you can earn bronze, silver, or gold in each of the different challenges, which gives you a reason to go back and play them again if you don't do so well. Or you could just say, fuck jetpacks.
Well, jetpacks aside, $20 on Pilot Sports, what do you say?
I do give it a try. It wasn't bad. It was just a little slower than I was expecting, but I think if you go into it knowing that you're going to be playing this more leisurely kind of flying game, that you're not going to be like as caught off guard by it as I was. And at least you know that the jetpacks are awful.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, the next game to talk about is called Gravity Duck, developed by Wobblyware, published by Rattalaika Games. It released August 13th on PS4. 14th on Xbox, 16th on the Switch for $4.99. Have you ever wanted to be rich? What if you could become rich and control gravity? This duck can help you with both. Flip, dodge, and traverse mind-bending gravity puzzles in 140 levels in order to grab all the eggs to return to the Maui statue. Cole, what the hell is Gravity Duck?
I'm trying to figure out how I understood the plot of the shmup, but didn't realize there was a plot to Gravity Duck. Like, where the fuck did all of this about a duck wanting to be rich and still in the... I just thought the duck just wanted eggs because ducks lay eggs. And it seemed like a... I don't know. I'm so confused. But they're golden eggs. They are gold, aren't they?
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
So Gravity Duck is a platformer.
It is a platformer, but unlike Exception where you rotate the board, Gravity Duck lets you rotate your duck. This is a Rattalaika game. Everything I'm going to say about it makes it sound weird because it is weird. And that's fine. you know, it's got an adorable art style. The levels are well laid out. I was genuinely surprised. I don't know why. I shouldn't be surprised anymore at this point. Rattalaika games are stupid easy completions, and this one is no different. Let's go ahead and approach the elephant in the room like we always have to do with a Rattalaika game. You can knock this motherfucker out in 10 to 20 minutes, and that's great. But somehow, these publishers managed to keep putting out these games that you can knock out in 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes. But if you actually, like, sit down and continue playing it, there are so many goddamn levels beyond what it takes to just beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole full-fledged, well-fleshed-out game hiding in there. You can just stop at level 50.
Yeah, and once you hit level 50, you're guaranteed to have the completion, unless you somehow didn't die. But you did. You obviously did.
You're gonna. It's a platformer. Yeah. It's meant to be hard, and you're gonna be like flipping your duck around in the air over spikes, trying to hit these weird little spinny things to rotate you a different way so that you might maybe not hit the spikes. Like but I said,
there's four locales. Each has 35 stages, so There's 140 levels in this game. So if you want to go. Keep going after you get your completion. There's plenty of game that's left to play. And in my opinion, I think it's really fun.
I encourage you to keep playing. I really do. Like, yeah, okay, 10 minute completion, 20 if you suck balls. Fine. Some people do. But the levels are really creative and well-designed, and they really push your limits when it comes to how you move with that duck flying around in the air, just being hurled at the walls. Because the rule is that, yeah, once you're in the air, you can go up or down. Aki does not listen to the whole thing that I'm saying. She only hears when I say something like balls or goddamn. but there's rules for how you can move that duck around. You can't just jump and then flip to the side and stick to a wall. You have to hit one of those ports that's going to rotate you the proper way. So you have to put some thought into this game and how you're going to clear these levels. And even though there is no timer, I was still trying to speedrun that shit. Like, I had a guide up running just so I could hear if I needed to do something different. You're going to get the achievements just from playing. There's guides, but you don't need that shit. Sorry to the guide makers.
Here's the guide. Play the first 50 levels.
Seriously, I appreciate what y'all do, but this one wasn't necessary.
There's your achievement guide. Sorry, Bills.
Yeah.
Got you on this one. Play 50 levels. The end.
But I actually, even though I had the achievement guide running, I found myself trying to beat his times. Like, I hear when he was going through a level and I was like, no, I already hit that. I'm ahead of it. And I was trying to beat the levels before he did.
So you were speed running an achievement guide.
I know it. Isn't that ridiculous?
My God.
And I did it. I did so well. I was so proud of me. There were a couple times where I got stuck and was dumb. Some of the levels are really skill based and you have to pay attention to what you're learning as far as how to manipulate the character around the platforms and the obstacles, or you're not going to get to level 50 without throwing a controller. I think it was somewhere around 38 or something like that, that I got stupid stuck and I couldn't do it. Might have been 26. It was one of the like mid-range level. It wasn't all that high. And I was so frustrated. I was like, how the fuck am I stuck already? In a 10-minute completion. What the fuck am I doing with my life? But, yeah, 140 some odd levels, you said, right?
140.
140 on the nose. There's so much here, and these are generally affordable games. I'm assuming this one is not any different on the price scale.
$5. Do you not listen when I say this shit at the beginning?
No, that's usually when I take a moment to look at chat. I'm trying to multitask here, Joe. I want to be a good podcaster and a good streamer. I can't do it all.
But yeah, $5 on Gravity Duck. What's your verdict?
I give it a buy it. I don't even want to say fuck it, why not? Because there was just so much involved that it makes it well beyond worth the $5. And it is well done. Plays well, controls well. Little wonky sometimes. You can walk a little too far off of the platforms and not die. But I wasn't mad at it because that usually helped when I was stuck.
I've had some wonkiness like hitting the jump button too soon after landing. You can't really go super fast. When it
would do that, you would hear it too. Like, you'd hear that second jump sound, but he wouldn't go anywhere. Yeah. So you knew what you did. And again, that's where it was just, it kind of boiled down to the skill of knowing how to play it and knowing when to go and when not to go.
Still a good game, though.
Yeah. I'm not mad
at it. Absolutely worth the $5.
Yeah.
I actually bought it on the PS4 and Vita.
Because, you monster.
Well, because it's $5 on PS4, and you get it on PS4 and Vita for $5.
Oh, okay.
And they have two trophy lists, one for each system.
You whore.
So I got two platinum trophies in about a half hour.
Wow. Two platinum trophies and a completion on Xbox?
Total, yeah. In about like 40 minutes total.
That's obscene.
Yeah, it is. But a final game to talk about tonight is called Ion Fury. You may know it previously as Ion Maiden. They had to change the name. Wonder why. Mm-hmm. Developed by Void Point, published by 3D Realms and 1C Entertainment. Released August 15th on Steam for $24.99. While Shelley Bombshell Harrison earned her codename Diffusing Bombs for the Global Defense Force, when evil transhumanist mastermind Dr. Jadis Heskel unleashes the members of his cybernetic cult onto the streets of Neo DC, she knows it's time to start causing explosions instead of preventing them. Cole, what is Ion Fury?
You ever notice how some games just kind of like take a bunch of cyberpunk-y sounding words and kind of chuck them together in a bucket and then use those to describe their game. This one did that, but it was fitting because that's also how they designed the game. Ion Fury is very much a futuristic... Excuse me, I have the hiccups.
Great time.
Come out of nowhere, too.
Ion Fury is a game about going...
Okay, I think I'm okay. So it's super futuristic, cyberpunk tinged just a little bit, given the whole Neo DC thing. Basically, Doom, Duke Nukem, and Wolfenstein, but like the old school Doom, Duke Nukem, and Wolfenstein, where you have that voxel art. But it's 3D and you just walk around randomly interacting with walls and hoping one's a secret.
So the old school DOS games.
Oh my gosh. They took every aspect of those old games and just crammed them into this and then sat on the lid.
Sweet.
And it works out beautifully. That said, it's not a flawless experience. I do want to point out, though, they wear their heart on their sleeve with this game. They wear their shirt on their sleeve. Oh, I'm tired.
We're almost there.
I know. They wear their heart on their sleeve. There are even posters hanging up in some areas that have what are those caca demons from Doom?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're straight up the demon, and I should have wrote it down what it was. But it just references the caca demons from Doom. And the funny part is that it's been so long since I've played Doom that I wouldn't have recognized them if it weren't for the fact that I saw shit streaming Doom recently. And then as soon as I saw it, I did a double take and turned back, and I was like, I know that monster.
Nice.
But... literally everything about how this game plays. It's first-person shooter. It's got the voxel art. You have your little, face of Bombshell down at the bottom, and she gets more beat up and fucked up looking the closer to death you are. You're going to be searching around, looking for armor, looking for shells, beating up bad guys. I like that you can beat them up with a electrified baton. And when you do, you can see their little voxel art skeletons. It's incredible.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Like, when I first started playing, I was like, these kind of look like Terminators. But no, they have skeletons in there, because as soon as you whack them, it's so good. Also, don't whack Terminator-looking guys that are using shotguns, because it'll hurt you. Don't ask how I know. Might not have been my greatest move, but it looked funny.
Proud of you.
Damn it. It looked like a good idea at the time. May not have been one in practice. Much like, the games that it references, your goal is going to be wander around these mazes. Like the areas in the rooms that you explore, they're labyrinths, and I got lost so easily. But that's exactly what I remember doing when I played Doom and Wolfenstein 2. So that's part of the retro gaming experience here. It's so rare for me to be playing a game that references back old school games, and I actually understand those references because I actually played that genre. Because usually when we're like, oh, this is an old school shmup and Cole's reviewing it, I'm sitting there going, but I don't remember the original. So, no, I get the games that this is hearkening back to, and I really enjoyed it. But I also enjoyed that they gave us a female protagonist. Every Doom and old school Wolfenstein and all that, you had a dude. And that's just the way it was. And that's people's perspective on how first-person shooters should be. And that's one area where they modernized Ion Fury. And I appreciate it. I really did. She had all the same shitty attitude quirks as her predecessors. She just had a slightly higher-pitched voice doing it. And I appreciated that. If you're looking for those cheesy one-liner kind of quotes like you would have got in old school Doom, you will not be disappointed.
Nice.
The voice acting, all of it just comes together and just showers you in retro goodness. But again, because these are big labyrinthine areas, there are no mini maps. And you are doing the whole run around, shoot things. Good luck with that. shoot things and find key cards and open doors. Get the fuck out. Continue on. I spent a disgusting amount of time looping around in areas because sometimes it's you would expect it that the doors aren't always overwhelmingly obvious. But given that grungy, cyberpunk, everything gritty and dark aesthetic that's going on, sometimes doors don't look like doors. No. And so it's really super easy to just walk past the same door 74 times and be like, I had no idea I could open that area. Hug the wall, press Y, good luck. Now, as fun as all that is, I had a few issues. Played this on Steam. Me and mouse and keyboard inputs, they're things. Like, they don't work well for people with arthritis for long periods of time to play like that. So, it was made a little worse by the fact that there's no sensitivity settings. You have inversion settings, but nothing for sensitivity. So, I've never seen a first-person shooter where the sensitivity was too much for me.
Yeah.
I purposely play with that shit on high on everything I play, and Ion Fury was killing me, and there was no way to turn it down. I was genuinely shocked. That went for mouse and keyboard and controller. The other complaint is that the game would struggle when I would plug a controller in. I tried it a couple of different times with a couple of different controllers. I have a USB 360 controller my husband usually uses. I borrowed it for a few minutes to see how it would do. It played fine, but getting the game to recognize it initially was a bitch. Mm. If the game was already running and I plugged in that controller, it did not think that controller existed for shit. None at all. It wouldn't pick it up. I would have to completely back it out, close it out, and relaunch the whole game all over fresh and new before it would recognize that that controller was there. Even still, because it was so overly sensitive, we discovered that controller had stick drift we didn't know about.
Oh, jeez.
Because it was just spinning and looking at the floor and spinning around, and I'm like, you were just playing Forza with this thing. What's wrong with it? He's like, it wasn't fine when I was playing Forza. Yeah, it was not fine playing Ion Fury.
So the game needs sensitivity settings.
Yes. But then I switched it out for our other Xbox One wire controller. And it was slightly better. Again, the sensitivity was just all over the place. But it still had that whole issue of don't plug it in mid-game. Even if you're unplugging another controller and plugging this one in, still not going to find it. You have to plug in your controller before you launch the game. Just a small note. Otherwise, beyond sensitivity settings, I had a lot of fun. This is a great callback to old school games. The retro first-person shooters of yesteryear that I used to sit and play on my flea market-built PC. And This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. So $25, your verdict?
The price is a little high. I can see why. There's a lot there. Plays well. Looks good. But it's not for everybody. And I would say that this would apply more to those fans of the retro games rather than people who enjoy more modern first-person shooters. So I'm going to go for a try it on it.
Makes sense.
But it's a recommended try it, definitely.
Awesome. So some pretty good games this week.
Yeah. You want to be surprised? Do you have
a pick of the week?
I think you'll be surprised.
Let's hear it.
Exception was my pick of the week.
Really?
Yeah.
That one wasn't on my radar, but I might have to pick that one up now if you're speaking so highly of it.
Who knew that I could like a speedrunner?
Yeah, no shit.
I didn't know I had it in me. Like, I totally went into it like, oh, I just want to beat these levels. Fuck speedrunning. God damn it. Why do they even have a clock? And then I found myself going, oh, I can totally shave off 4 seconds.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But that is it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out and listening to us. Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
Take your money.
I don't know if I could do your voice, and what was that word that you said before that I liked the way you said it? High school.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. Now the real question is, how do you say Yeller?
Yeller? Oh my God, you're so funny.